Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Here till 5 a.m., Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It is Monday, and that means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, because it's a jokey time. And also, starting a little bit later than usual, after the 2 o'clock news, we will bring in Eric and Colin for our movie reviews and box office talk as well. That's all coming up, and we're going to talk about karaoke and more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text, 312-981-7200. And as I was mentioning to Carl and Lisa, that our good friend Herb Weisbaum is with us. Now, normally he's on with us on Fridays. We usually once a month, on a Friday, he joins us. He is an Emmy Award-winning reporter. He covers the consumer beat for NBCNews.com. And you can follow him on Facebook at Consumer Man and Twitter at The Consumer Man. And his website is ConsumerMan.com. He will answer any and all of your questions consumer-related. If you're worried about being scammed, if you have any kind of questions money-wise, consumer-wise, he's always looking out for you, always wanting to make sure that you're safe and not falling for any of the scams and always going after the bad guys and teaching you guys about that kind of stuff as well. If you have any concerns or questions, the phone lines will be open, and we can have Herb right here live in studio. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And Herb is going to be waiting for it. He'll be in here in just a few minutes. 312-981-7200. Again, that's the phone number for any and all consumer-related questions or concerns. So get them in there now. Text us or call us at 312-981-7200. So that's what's coming up on the show. We're going to have a cool visit live in studio from Herb, and then the movie reviews with Colin and Eric, and we'll talk about karaoke and some other cool stuff, and then my dad's going to tell a joke. That's what's coming up right here on 720 WGN. I hope everybody had a good weekend. Let's talk with my great producer, Dan Shagrew. Hello, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How are you?
Good, man. How about yourself?
All right. How was your weekend?
Good, good. Eileen had a bachelorette party outside of town, so it was me and the girls, and we had a blast.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Just hanging out with the kids.
Yep.
All right. Very, very, very cool. Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
And you got to hang out with Herb.
Yeah, Herb came over to the house. He and Eileen and I had some pizza and a good conversation.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad it was nice to actually meet him face to face.
Yeah.
You know, he's been on the show for many years, and he's a very cool guy. And it's
indeed
great to have him in the studio. We're looking forward to it. And in the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Vic, how are you?
Hey, good morning, Nick. Doing well?
All right, man. How was your weekend?
Yeah, it was pretty good. Uneventful, but we enjoyed the weather. That was kind of a nice break from the hot weather, you know what I mean?
Saturday was lovely.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
Really was. It felt great.
Oh, man. Lovely. And I guess Bears fans are pretty excited, huh?
Well, I mean, you got to be happy anytime you're in first place of the division.
Yeah.
That's nice going into week four.
Yeah.
I think I'm where I'm at. Where I was at the beginning of the season, I figured they'll still be a better than 500 team, and there's some problems with the offense I think everybody's seeing now. But
that's what they're saying.
There's improvements, you know? Yeah. I think I see improvements. The defense looks great.
Dan, how are you feeling about the Bears?
Yeah, I feel the same way. That the offense is a little disconcerting, but man, that defense is something special to watch. It just is. I mean, you don't win many games 16-14, and that's what they managed to do.
Yeah.
And they scored those 14 points in the first two drives. They went 0-4 for the rest of the game.
Oh, so. Did they really?
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, they shut him down after that first first few minutes of the first quarter.
So I'm not a big football guy but I was noticing on my news feed people comparing this defense to 85. Is that crazy?
I don't think I'd go that far. I would go 2006. I'd definitely hold it up there with those guys, but not 85.
Okay. Cuz you can't mention that team, you know. That was sacred ground right there.
Right.
Yeah. And especially, you know, if somebody would have called in earlier today or yesterday and said that, you know, I think this defense is as good as 85, I think Hampton would have killed somebody.
Yeah.
I think they win a Super Bowl, then you can look at you can start comparing the two defenses.
If they don't lose another game as
well. Exactly.
Right.
So, all right. Well, sports was a good day today for unless you were a Sox fan. It was a good day yesterday, but all right, well, let's take a break here and let's bring in Herb. our good friend Herb Weisbaum is actually going to be live in studio, and he is here to answer any and all of your consumer-related questions. So call now or text right now if with any of your concerns or questions. It's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here, 18 floors above downtown Chicago. And we're here until 5 a.m. We got the movie reviews coming up. They're going to be a little bit later than usual this week because we have a special guest here. He's our good friend Herb Weisbaum, Emmy Award-winning reporter. He covers the consumer beat for NBCNews.com. You can read all of his stories, subscribe to his newsletter at ConsumerMan.com. And it's very special because, you know, normally we talk to Herb via the phone, where you are in Seattle most of the time. But you're here. You're live in studio.
I am. I'm thrilled to be here.
It's great to meet you face
to
face.
Likewise.
Finally.
And yeah. I was told that you must wear a hat when you're on your show, so I brought my hat with me.
Well, it's because I always wear a hat.
I know.
So,
I know.
There
we
you
can
go.
See in you know, Seattle. We know what's going on.
Okay. How you been?
I'm doing great. Thank you very, very much.
And you went to your alma mater,
I was in Syracuse. It was a celebration of life for our college professor that a number of us had who actually helped us throughout the rest of our lives. So we later became friends, and he was a mentor throughout our lives, and he passed away, and we went to celebrate his life and just remember him. And my roommate from college, Bob Costas, was there, and some other people were there.
That's one of my favorite details, is that you were college roommates with Bob Costas.
And we just told some great stories, and it was just wonderful. And I knew I had to get out of Syracuse, you got to go through Chicago. And I called up Dan, and I said, could I like hang out and maybe have some deep dish pizza I haven't had for a while? And so we checked out Lou Malnati's, which was fabulous. I got to tell you, he got both for me so I could do a taste test, the flat and the deep dish.
The thin crust and the deep dish.
I don't know why you like the thin crust, because it's like eating like little appetizer things.
It's my favorite.
No, the deep dish, I'm telling you.
I like the thin crust, always have.
So we had a nice time, and here I am. And beautiful facilities, this wonderful studio.
They did a great job with this, with the new studios and everything. And you know, they're still pretty fresh. We started working out of here in June, so it's been a few months, but it's still... Everything is shiny and new, and I have an office.
Oh, yeah, I saw it, all the horror pictures.
Yes, the horror pictures. You can tell everybody who walks in and walks down the hallway and looks can pick my office.
Yep.
Because it's me with a whole bunch of horror people on the walls.
And I just have to tell you, every time I'm on the show, I always get email from your listeners, and I love it. And they say, I heard you on the show with Nick, but I have a question. I always answer them, and I love to hear from folks, and it just shows how people are really listening and paying attention.
Well, for those people, like I said, you're usually on with us on Friday morning.
Mm-hmm.
So there might be people who don't listen on Friday morning when they do listen on Monday morning.
Sure.
Give everybody, you know, the background on Herb.
Sure, I've been doing consumer reporting for about 35 years now, and my goal is to educate people. You have to be an informed consumer in this world to get the good deals, avoid the bad deals, to avoid the ripoffs and scams, and I'm here to help and to just make you a smarter person. Hopefully, if some people are listening, they'll call, and I would love to talk to you tonight.
Sure.
And I hate crooks. I hate criminals. I hate con artists. They just make me crazy.
Yeah.
And we just have to be smart enough to not let them steal our personal information, our money, and take advantage of us because they're just rotten to the core.
All the years that you've been appearing on my show, I've learned a lot.
Thank you.
And you've helped out a lot. And I've certainly. Over the years of getting advice from you, I've certainly sort of changed the way I handle my personal business and my money and all that kind of
stuff. And I learn a lot when I research these stories, because when I do these things, I mean, I usually spend a few days to write one column for NBC and talk to 9, 10, 11 sources and do a whole bunch of research. And sometimes I'll find out things that I didn't know. And that's the great part of this business. I'm still discovering things all the time.
Now, you went to school in Syracuse.
Yes.
And I'm looking at your
new house.
Yep. I'm looking at your hat. That's the hat you're wearing. What tell me about how that, when the consumer thing happened, what did you go to college for?
I thought I wanted to be a rock and roll disc jockey. And
well, you do have a radio show.
Thank you. Well,
you
yes,
do have a radio, and you got a great voice.
I grew up in Philadelphia with the Boss Jocks.
Oh,
in the George Michael was one of my mentors, the George Michael Sports Machine.
Yeah.
And I want to be a Boss Jock, so I went to Syracuse thinking I'd do that. I worked in college. I did work at the really tight little rock and roll station, WOLF. It was the first commercial station Dick Clark worked at, as a matter of fact.
Is that right?
And I was, stand back. Does Dan have reverb?
No, I do.
No, okay.
Hold on. You need reverb?
Well, it'd be better.
Wait a second.
Okay. This is the news.
Okay.
Really? Okay.
All right. You ready?
Okay.
You need it now?
Yeah, right?
Here we
okay.
go.
I was. Herb Elliott slamming the tunes in your ear from the twin turntables of sound that go round and round, 5,000 watts and sounding like a million, WOLF Syracuse, the Big 15. So I did that for a couple of years. And
you remember the whole spiel,
too. Oh, yeah. And then I was on the college radio station, WAER, one of the first campus radio stations. Uh-huh. And I was doing the Friday afternoon show, so they let me play the oldies because the frats in the sorority houses would blast it. You know, I was allowed to get it because it was a progressive station, but I was allowed to do, like, the Beach Boys and James Taylor and the Beatles and stuff. And Bob's and I, our favorite artist was Neil Diamond. And I owe my career to Neil Diamond. So I played Crackle and Rosie for Bob. I feel a tap on the shoulder. It's the news director, the program director. And he goes, okay, you're done. I said, no, I got two more hours to go. He said, no, you're done. You don't play Neil Diamond on the station. Go be a newsman. And that's how my career.
What was the reason for them not wanting to play Neil Diamond?
Neil was not exactly for a progressive rock college station in 1972.
Okay, no, that makes sense. Yeah.
Especially Cracklin' Rosie.
No, if that's not prog rock.
And I did all the basic reporting there. Everybody does the fires and the murders, and I just decided I wanted to do more and help people, to use the power of this medium, and so I just found myself gravitating to consumer stories, and then I worked in Syracuse for many, many years, and then I was offered a job in Seattle, and as a consumer reporter, and then that's just been my passion ever since.
Yeah. Wow. Well, you help a lot of people out, and your website is consumerman.com.
Yep, all my NBC stories are posted there to make it real easy, because, you know, on the internet now, things are going in 24 hours.
Right.
So this is a really easy way to go there and find the stories you're looking for.
Well, if you have concerns or questions, and you want to get some advice from Herb, he's here live in studio, 312-981-7200 for talk and text, 312-981-7200 for any and all consumer-related
issues.
Come on,
call me. Give me a call.
Did you guys call the radio station The Wolf?
It was Wolf. The Wolf. No, that's a format now.
The Wolf.
No, this is just Wolf.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. I thought that would have been the nickname of the because it makes sense.
Yes,
you know,
yeah.
So, all right. Well, let's talk about some of the stories that you that you brought in. First one is I'm glad your dog's okay.
Thank you. Yes.
Tell everybody about you wrote a piece about pet insurance.
Yes. Did you go on the website? That's his picture on consumerman.com. If you look on there.
Oh, no.
That's my dog. And the ears are like go forever. Okay.
Okay. All right.
So,
cool.
So a lot more people than ever are buying pet insurance now, but still few pets in percentage-wise, are actually protected by pet insurance. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't realize how much these medical expenses can be. So I started with a personal story about my dog, Sam. Sam's a wonderful dog. He's about 9-10 years old now. And we got him from a shelter. He was on death row, and we rescued him for our house. And he was happy as can be, healthy guy, and one day he just wasn't doing right. We took him to the vet, and they said, get him to emergency. We took him to the emergency hospital. He had contracted a bacterial disease called leptospirosis, and the disease is very, very brutal disease. It goes right to their kidneys, and it's hard to diagnose, and if the doctor doesn't get him on antibiotics right away, by the time they figure out what it is, their kidneys will shut down and they'll die. Oh. We were lucky they diagnosed this right away. He had to start massive doses of antibiotics. He was in the emergency for 5 days. The bill came to $10,000. They saved his life. I would have paid twice that much.
Yeah.
But I had insurance on Sam, and the insurance gave me, they paid 90%. I had a check for $9,000 within 3 days.
Wow.
You tell me what human health insurance.
No, absolutely.
Right.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm looking at your dog. Yeah. Adorable.
Isn't he cute? And you know what? He can move the ears independently, so one can listen to the cat and one can listen to the TV. Seriously, I'm not kidding.
He's a beautiful dog.
So, and when I first started reporting on pet insurance 15 or so years ago, it was pretty lousy. It was basically a ripoff. Checkbook.org, which is a great nonprofit organization I work with back in D.C. all the time, they did an analysis of 9 major pet insurance companies in the country and came to the conclusion that it's much better than it was. They've really improved. They now do some hereditary conditions. They now even do some alternate medicine, like you can do acupuncture for your dog, and they will pay for it.
Wow.
And so the tragedy is, and I've actually talked to vets, somebody will come in, and the vets try to be real good now. They'll say, you know, this procedure is $4,000 to $5,000. We just want to let you know, and you have to pay at the time of service. And they'll have people say, I can't afford $6,000 for this procedure. Just put them down. And that breaks my heart. I mean, it just breaks my heart that they have to do that so often. And a lot of people can afford $30 or $50 a month for insurance, but they can't afford an $8,000 bill coming out of nowhere.
Right.
So that's the benefit of this. So they looked at 9 major insurance companies, and they found that 2 out of the 9 are the best. That if you're going to get it, these are the 2 to get. And it's in the article, but it's one is Healthy Paws.
Okay.
And the other is Trupanion, which happens to be based in Seattle and is the policy that I got from my guy. The reason why they like these two the best is because they don't up the premium every year based on the age of the pet, as most pet insurance companies do. So you start out really low at $37, and by the time your dog is around 6 to 8 years old, maybe you're paying $116, $120, and most people bail. And that's when you're probably going to need it the most.
Exactly.
Because the dog's, not that a young dog, I mean, I did a story, a 1-year-old lab, the woman thankfully had insurance, and he swallowed 4 tennis balls, and it was $4,000 to do the surgery. So the age is, just like a kid, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But these two do not, so my guy's been paying this, I've been paying the same premium for Sam for 3 years now. It hasn't gone up. It will only go up based on the cost of medical care in our area. So if that goes up, it will go up. But it just gives me great peace of mind when things need to be done. The cat had a blockage. It was $500. Should we take an x-ray? Should we not take an x-ray? Yeah, take the x-ray. It was a blockage. He had to go in there and, you know, he could have had serious intestinal problems.
Yeah.
He didn't have to think, did I really want to have that care done from, these are my family members. That's how I feel about our pets. They're our family members.
No. I know, people feel that way about their pets.
Yeah.
There's no question about it.
Yeah.
No question about it. It's important. I wasn't aware that there were so many options for pet insurance.
Yeah, it's become big now. And these are just the 9 major the months. And the great thing is some companies, and God bless them, are making this like a benefit now. They're letting you buy pet insurance through your employer, mm-hmm. which is a great corporate benefit that a lot of these places are giving, and more power to them.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those things where, you know, And a lot of the articles I've seen written, and even the one checkbook, they always say it's a bad deal for you if your pet is healthy. And I always respond to people, how do you know that? I mean, replace the word dog with your kid. You know, insurance for your kid is a bad deal if your kid's healthy. Oh,
right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, I have homeowners insurance. I've never once complained that I haven't had a fire, that I haven't been able to use my homeowners insurance. I buy insurance. Hopefully I'm not going to use it.
You don't want to use it. But that's the point.
But they're doing cardiac surgery now. My previous dog, Jack, he was a Shih Tzu. He had the bug eyes. He had his own ophthalmologist. He had radial keratotomy done 4 times on his eyes to prevent, because he's getting infections in his eyes. We have a blood bank, and I know there are many around in Seattle. They do blood transfusions now. They do everything.
Yeah.
Hydrotherapy for the animals.
Yeah.
But these things are expensive. And if you're covered, then you can deal with that kind of thing.
And what are some of the other shopping tips? You have some shopping tips.
Well, the big thing is don't go for the wellness care. Because the wellness care is something that it's like you're passing through the insurance company and they're just going to pay it anyway. So you want it for the catastrophic kind of thing. So you want that kind of thing. And you can also, you know, the great thing with these sites is that they actually, in most cases, have like little calculators online. So you can figure out if I want this amount of deductible, if I want that amount of deductible, here's what the premium is going to cost me. You know, so you can actually figure out what's going to factor in your budget and take care of that kind of thing. And that's a really good way to do it. I would suggest getting when your pet is young, you know, to do that. And make sure you understand what's covered and what's not. Most people who complain say, oh, I assumed this was covered.
Mm.
You never assume with insurance that anything is covered. You always want to make sure that you know exactly what the procedure is going to be covered. And some of these things now, it's amazing. If the doctor is set up, the filing is automatic. Literally, when you walk out the door, they file it with the insurance company. There is no paperwork required whatsoever and with the good companies, and a check shows up in the mail. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
Great piece. Okay, Herb, hang on.
Yep.
We're going to take a break. We got the news coming up. Herb Weissbaum is with us. He's our good friend. He's an Emmy Award-winning reporter. He covers the consumer beat for NBCNews.com. Joins us once a month, and we're really thrilled to have him live in studio with us. And again, the phone lines are open. If you have any consumer questions or concerns, Herb is here to help. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. The news is up after this. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here. It is a Monday morning, and the movie reviews are coming up. We're going to do it after 2 o'clock. We'll have Colin and Eric here to review all the new movies. That'll be coming up. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. Right now, though, we're very happy to have live in studio Herb Weissbaum, who is an Emmy Award-winning reporter. He covers the consumer beat for NBCNews.com and talks to us once a month, usually from his home in Seattle over the phone, but it's really nice to have you in the studio.
Much more fun. I like this.
Yeah, this is great. We've got phone lines are open right now. Text lines are open, too. He's here to help you out, 312-981-7200. A couple of texts real quickly. Your 412 area code says, when traveling, what form do you recommend? Traveler's checks, cash?
Well, you want to take a little bit of cash with you, and if you're traveling overseas, you want to take cash in the currency of the country and where which you're headed, so that like when you need to take a taxi cab or something at the airport, so do that at the bank before you go. Mm-hmm. In most cases, you're pretty well off if you, there's no reason not to take a credit card with you when you travel overseas. What you want to make sure is if you check with your credit card company and make sure there's not a foreign transaction fee, because there are fewer and fewer, but some credit cards charge a 3% transaction fee. That's above and beyond the conversion of whatever the currency is. So find out, and if you have one that charges a transaction fee, foreign transaction, you might want to get another card before you travel overseas. It's a good idea to alert your credit card company, hey, I'm traveling overseas, so they don't shut the card down, because the computers now have algorithms, and if you're out of profile, that signals fraud, and they might shut it down. The other thing is, there's one more tip. Oh, if the merchant says to you, hey, I'll convert into local currency for you, I'll convert it for you to dollars, and then you can pay. No. Just charge it on my card, put it in the liras or the pesos or whatever. My credit card company will do it, and they'll give me the best rate. Yeah. Don't let them. They're trying to pull a fast one on you.
I see.
Okay. No, you don't do the conversion. My card company will do it. Just tell them how many pesos I'm spending right here.
Right.
So if you want to do travel checks, that's fine, but then you got to get somebody to accept them. Credit cards are fine, and you have a lot of fraud protection with them. Just be careful, you know.
Yeah. Well, when we went to some years ago, we went to Ireland, and I immediately called my bank and my credit card, and said, hey, you know, I'm going to be using this. It's going to say Dublin, Ireland.
Right.
So don't freak out. That's where I'm going
to
be.
Yeah. And if we travel overseas, I tend to try to take two credit cards, one that I'll probably keep in the safety deposit box, that just for some reason, if one gets shut down because the algorithm and I can't get to the, I have something
else
that if I need it. And we went to Cuba for my 65th birthday last year, and they don't take credit cards or debit cards because the American government won't allow it.
Oh.
So you go with cash money.
Oh.
So you can take American dollars, and it's a 20% penalty to use them, or you go with loonies from Canada or euro, and then you convert them while you're over there. But we took 2,700 euros because we had no idea in an emergency what will possibly. And if you get extra pesos left over from Cuba, don't try to convert them here in America.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
We don't put it on your scrapbook and keep it for a while.
310 area code says, is there a website or other resource to select the best credit card options? One that can show the best values for cash back, travel miles, etc.
Sure. There are several really good websites to do that. One is called lowcards.com, mm-hmm. and one is called creditcards.com. Those are two really good ones. There's also Wallet Hub, which is a good site, and Nerd Wallet. So Nerd Wallet, Wallet Hub, creditcards.com, and lowcards.com. Mm-hmm. And they will all help you. A lot of times, every site will state its policy, as do we get. A lot of them get money if you go through, but most of them, the good ones, will say we don't stack the ratings based on that. They'll give you the true and honest rating. Mm-hmm. And the way is you can break it down, and you can look at the ones that have best cash back, the ones that are best for traveling, the best ones that have initial bonuses, the sort of kind of thing that you're looking for, and it can help you pre-sort the cards and look at that kind of thing.
Got it. Okay. Here is another question from our listeners. This is Kathy on WGN. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
Love your show.
Thank
and
you.
Herb, you do not sound 65. You sound like a spring chicken.
Oh, thank you. I'm actually 66 now,
wonderful.
But thank you very much.
Okay, I don't have exact details, but I'm going to be a little vague to get some general information from you.
Okay.
Our godson is 24, so he's a young guy. Inexperienced, he bought his first vehicle from a dealer in Indiana. The car was advertised online at $84.95, and pretty sure that's about what the sticker price was when he got into the dealership. When the paperwork to buy it was said and done, the price that they were going to finance was approximately $14,000. He put down $1,600. That brought the price down to $12,000. Mm-hmm. Now, the dealership, my husband got involved. The dealership cannot explain why there's a discrepancy between $84,95 that it was advertised at and the amount they're financing starts at $12,000.
Did he agree to extra things? Did you look at the contract? Did he agree to undercoating
That $12,000 doesn't even include the extended warranty that he did sign on.
Oh, okay.
Some other fees that he did, that we accepted. We know where those come from because that's just your dealership trying to tack on whatever they can. But literally, my husband questioned the dealership, and they could not explain the discrepancy between the $84,95, the $12,000 after the down payment.
Well, here's what I suggest you do. You should probably contact the Better Business Bureau and or the Attorney General's office and see if somebody can talk to the car dealer and find out what you may have to just bring a lawyer involved, see if you get a lawyer who'd be willing not to take him to court at this point in time, but just to say, mm-hmm. I need you to explain to me what's going on here. A Better Business Bureau may be able to work with them and try to work as an intermediary and try to find out what's going here. The advice that I want to give you, because a lot of things, unfortunately, were done wrong, and it's after the fact. A, you never go buy a car by yourself. You always go with somebody with you to check the paperwork and see what's going on. I won't buy a car by myself. I always bring a good friend along because it's so much emotion. There's so many numbers flying around. There's so much going on that I have somebody watching out for me and making sure I'm not doing something. You never buy the extras. You don't want undercoating. As a matter of fact, undercoating can null and void your warranty. The cars are already rust-proofed beautifully from the factory. You don't want that whatsoever. You basically, in most cases, do not need the extended warranty. That's a total cash cow for the dealers. In most cases, you don't need it. But what you need to do is you have to have your car inspected by an independent mechanic away from the dealership before you buy the car to know that you're getting a good car. And then again, you probably, in most cases, do not want to finance from the dealer because they'll probably not give you the best rate. You want to go on having financing lined up before you go in from your local credit union or your bank or something else to at least know if the dealership is offering you a good deal, which they're probably not. So that's just advice for future reference or anybody listening that buying a car is a very complicated process that they do every day of the week and we do once every number of years, and you've really got to do your homework and really, really be prepared to do it. But in your case, if they can't explain the numbers to you, there's something wrong with that big time, and you need to try to get somebody in there to help you, either the BBB, the State Attorney General's office, and if that doesn't work, maybe a lawyer who just contacts the dealership says, what the heck is going on here?
You have just confirmed exactly what I said. I told my husband to have him call the state's attorney and have him, they have a wonderful complaint on the BB site.
Right.
So, excellent.
Yeah.
Okay, Kathy, good luck.
Thank you so much.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye. You know, Nick, and there are a lot of good car dealers, and but the deal is they got you over a barrel. They're pros. They know what they're doing. The goal is to get the most money out of you. They're not your friends. They're a salesperson.
Yeah.
And you've got to be there and on your guard and negotiate. And, they're not. If they're going to lose money in the car, they'll let you walk out of the showroom. If you get to a point that it's so low that they're not going to make any money. But, you have to be every bit as tough and smart as they are because it's a game the way we work car sales in this country right now. You know.
By the way, callers and texters are asking us to repeat the other pet insurance company.
Oh, sure. It's Trupanion and Healthy Paws, P-A-W-S. Trupanion is T-R-U-P-A-N-I-O-N.
Like True Companion.
Right. And if you go to the website, consumerman.com, it's on there. And it also gives a chart and shows you the nine companies. They priced out a dog named Woof, a mixed breed dog who lived to be 13 years old. And it shows you what the various companies did and why they liked these two companies.
Okay.
That's a good comparison to sort of see what the other companies
are
doing.
And all this stuff is at consumerman.com.
Yeah.
So go to consumerman.com, and those are some of the, if you're interested in the pet insurance stuff. Tell everybody about your newsletter. It's free.
Yeah, and what I do is basically just send out what I've done for NBCNews.com and then the few stories I've done for Como Radio, my station back in the Seattle marketplace, to just keep you up to date. People can't find things. It's like proactively, like knocking on the door, hello, I wrote something new, and I'll let you know that it's out there. So it's just a way of, and I always link it to your podcast when I'm on.
Yeah.
And people like that.
So, okay. So you can check out consumerman.com, subscribe to the to the newsletter.
That's Herb, free, and I don't sell or share any information.
I wouldn't expect you to do okay. that. All right, Herb, hang on, okay?
Absolutely.
We're going to take a quick break. Herb Weisbaum is with us, and we've got more consumer stories to talk about. And check out consumerman.com. And also, the phone lines are open and the text lines are open with your questions. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And also, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. Our good friend Herb Weisbaum is here live in studio, and glad to have you here.
Thank you. Good time girl talking in between the commercial breaks.
Yeah, we were just having some fun talking away here in the studio. So you can follow him on Facebook at ConsumerMan, on Twitter at TheConsumerMan, and his website is ConsumerMan.com. You should also subscribe to his newsletter. Okay, let's talk about the scammers who are using fake checks to steal millions and millions of dollars.
Sure.
They will take any avenue to do this.
They will. This has been going on for a long time, but it's now bubbling up as one of the bigger scams that the Better Business Bureau is reporting. And it takes shape in various different scams, but it all involves a fake check. Mm-hmm. And here's the scenario, and then I'll give you some specific examples. The scenario is you are sent a check, and you are told for some reason, and we'll get to that in a minute, to deposit it in your checking account. And then once the money is in your checking account, you have to wire back some or all of the money. The way the scammers are getting away with this is because they know, and most Americans don't know, that because of federal regulations now, the money has to show up in your account when you look on your ledger, you know, online,
yeah,
within basically 2 days. That's federal regulations now, because they were holding the money for a real long time.
Right.
But just because it says funds available does not mean the check has cleared. The check has to go through the Federal Reserve process, which could take 5 to 10 days or more. And once the check is found to be bogus, the bank pulls the money out of your checking account, and you get left holding the bag, and the bad guys have the money, never to be found. So this is being used in a whole variety of scams. I'll just run down a couple of common scenarios, the most common ones. Mm-hmm. You're selling something online on Craigslist or some other online site. The person contacts you. They want to buy your furniture, your car. It's big with cars. They send you a check, and then, oops, you only wanted, you know, $3,000 for the car or $1,200 for the dresser, and I sent you a check for $500 more. Silly me. Why don't you just deposit the check, put it in your bank account. As soon as the check clears, the money shows up in your account. Just wire me back the rest, and it'll be just fine. Okay? Of course you do. The check's bogus. You get burned.
Right.
The other way is the mystery shopper scam. Everyone sees a mystery shopper, and it's a legitimate thing people can do. You're never going to get rich, but you can do it.
Yeah.
So you see an ad, or they contact you, want to be a mystery shopper. You sign up for the deal. They say, great, we need you. They FedEx you, or they send you checks. And, wow, FedEx, it's got to be legit. They're spending money with FedEx, right? They send you these checks. Look, every bit is real, because they're usually taking real checks and then just making counterfeits and maybe changing the routing number at the bottom.
Right.
Here's the deal. So you get a check for $2,500, Nick. Take out $250, and that's your fee for your first assignment. Then put it in the bank. As soon as the money's in your bank, take out $30. Go to Walmart, Target, Kmart, whatever, and buy whatever you want, and then write up this report, and they tell you the questions and answers to answer.
Right.
Again, it seems totally legit. Once you're done that, take out the rest of the money, the $2,000, and then go to the wiring service, the local money pack or whatever, you know, the wiring service, I'm forgetting the name, but you know what I mean. Those wire services, wire the money. And send $2,000 to this other mystery shopper, and then you write up a report on your experience, and they're going to write up the experience on the other end of the line. Well, of course, you're sending it to them.
Right.
There is no report, but they got you, you know, they're hooking you along.
Right.
And then when the bank contacts you and says it's no good, they're long gone. You can never reach them again, and the money's completely gone. So I cannot think, when I was writing the story, I talked to a lot of fraud fighters. Is there any scenario that you can possibly think of where somebody you don't know sends you a check, asks you to deposit it, and then wire them back the money? And the resounding answer was no.
No.
There is no legitimate reason that any of us can think of why somebody would do that. So the bottom line is, don't do it and don't fall for it. But they are getting getting tens of millions of dollars from people this way. It's just a huge scam. According to the BBB, this new report that came out, done by the way, by a former Federal Trade Commission person who was in Chicago. He did the report. You have a local fraud fighter right here in Chicago, Steve Baker, who's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And they estimate that as many as 500,000 Americans were burned by fake check scams every year, and the average loss they're reading is about $1,200. So we're talking about a heck of a lot of money these crooks are getting. So you really, really got to be careful.
What are you? I know you in the article you talk about how you can protect yourself. What are some of the advice?
I mean, the bottom line is just period and end of story. Don't do this. There's no legitimate reason why anybody should want to do this kind of thing. Is send you a check and just understand the way the banking system works. That you know, a check is not technically cleared or valid until you know it goes all the way through the system. The other one they're using it for, the third big one they're using it for, is for prize scams. So you just, hey, congrats. They love to use Publishers Clearinghouse because everybody knows them. Okay, Publishers Clearinghouse does not call you, by the way. And they don't send you an email. And they don't do it on social media. They show up at your door. Hey, yeah. The balloons. You want a big prize. But what they do is they tell you you've won all this money, millions of dollars, and all you need to do is pay the handling fees and the shipping fees. So we're going to send you a check to cover that and then deposit it and wire off the money to them. The last one is work at home. A lot of people, I mean, you can work at home. You can be very successful doing that. Everybody telecommutes now. But what they do is they tell you you've got the job, and they sometimes use names of very reputable companies. A woman I spoke to got burned. She knew the company. It was a legitimate company. They used the real name of the real HR person. Okay.
Wow.
But what they did is you need to buy your gear at home from us. So you have to have supplies, some computer gear, some stuff that we have proprietary that you have to use. So we're going to send you the check, and then you buy it from our vendor. Mm-hmm. Again, you get the $2,000 check, you put it in the bank, 2 days later you think you have the money, you buy the stuff from the vendor, which is really them. You're giving them the money, right. You don't get anything, they're long gone, and you're burned. Mm-hmm. Just don't deal with wiring money off these people. It's like giving them cash and then walking away,
right.
Bye-bye, it's done and over with.
Right, that's not good. All right, well, that piece, by the way, is also available at Consumer
Man. Absolutely.
ConsumerMan.com. A few texts here, Herb.
Sure.
847 area code says, I found another good tip is to let your credit card company know if you're traveling to another state. I found this out 3 weeks ago when picking up a rental car at the Orlando airport. To be fair, my credit card company sent me an advisory email about 2 weeks before my vacation asking if I was going to be using my credit card out of town, but I ignored the email.
Most credit cards have gotten a little bit better about that, but yes, it can't hurt to tell them if it's going to be something that's way, way out of profile, something like that. It's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Or what happens with my credit card, when I rented the card in Syracuse, it just said to me, hey, it was Capital One, hey, did you just do this? And say yes or no, and if no, then we'll start looking at it. If it's yes, we're going to, you know, it's great. Keep on spending your money.
I have a Capital One credit card, too, and they do that. You know, if it's something unusual, they contact me via text.
Yeah, and email.
And
you know what? It doesn't bother me in the least. Thank you for doing your job.
Absolutely.
And that's why they've actually, I mean, there are more people being burned with credit card fraud, but the scammers are getting less and less because they've got the algorithms now that are spotting them right away. So in the old days, it might be $5,000 or $10,000 before they realize your card. These days, they get them where it's a couple of $100s.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, it's crazy. You know, like I'll purchase something online that's unusual or something that doesn't fit into the pattern.
Yep.
And I mean, within minutes, that my phone buzzes and they're like, "Hey, we just did you do this? Yes or no?" And then you say yes, and they're like, "Okay."
Right. It's funny. I tried to buy something about a year ago from a laptop from my wife. It was a good price on Walmart.com, and I went to Walmart.com and I got a note from my American Express. I'd never bought anything at Walmart before.
Oh, that was your first.
I was out of profile. Did you really shop at Walmart?
Well, by the way, you were trying to think of Western Union.
Western Union. Yes, thank you. Yes, or MoneyGram. Yes, right. Absolutely. Thank you.
815 area code says, Herb, I went through a bad divorce. I didn't go through bankruptcy, but paid lots of debt off, and I am now starting over. What credit cards can I try to rebuild with a 580 score?
There are credit cards, and if you go to the websites we talked about, like the NerdWallet or Wallet Hub or LowCards.com or that kind of thing, they usually have breakdowns for people with lower credit. They'll probably give you a less credit balance to do that. Another way to start your credit, which is really good, is it's fairly easy or much easier to get a card at a gas station. Gas companies will usually give that to you earlier, so you start to build up your credit history. That's good. And the other thing is a lot of retailers. So you might be able to get a Macy's or a Saks or a Home Depot. Depot or something, again, because they want you to shop there. It'll be lower level, but the key is you've got to pay on time every single time and keep the balance fairly low. You want to try to keep it under 30% or less of the credit limit. So if you have a $1,000 limit on the card, you never want to carry a balance, try not to carry a balance at all, but have it less than $300, because if it's over that, that makes the algorithms really, really nervous. So, and by the way, the other thing is, I still keep hearing this. People think that, just another story came out last week, that you have to carry a balance to get a good credit score. You do not have to carry a balance to have a good, you just have to pay it off on time.
Yeah.
That's what you have to do.
That's what I always heard.
Yeah.
I always heard that you should, it's better if you keep a balance. And it never made sense to me, but I always, you know, I said, okay, well, that's
fine. What does help it is if you have a mix of cards. So if you have like a charge card and a credit card and a mortgage and a car loan, the mix of, that you're handling it responsibly, that you pay on time, that you keep the how much credit you use to a fairly low level, and how old your accounts are. That's why if there's a credit card you have and you're not paying an annual fee, but it's been around for a long time, don't cancel it because your credit history is based on how long your credit file is going on, so you get points for that.
Yeah, okay. It's not easy, but you can do it. I did it. I'm living proof.
You are.
870 area code says, just an FYI, there's a pet insurance in England named petinthepickle.com.
Those Brits.
Pet in a pickle. So, all right. Well, listen, Herb, man, it just flew by.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Flew by, and it was just great to have you here in studio.
Thank you.
And have a safe trip home. And it was great to have you come down. And you brought me some treats from Seattle.
I brought you some coffee, some salmon, and some Theo's chocolate, the famous chocolate that everybody loves from Seattle.
Yeah.
So,
well, I appreciate it.
Share it with your family.
I will. I will do so. And best to your family as well.
It's a pleasure. Always good to be with you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Herb Weisbaum, everybody. Check out consumerman.com for his newsletter and all the stuff we were talking about a little bit earlier. All right. The news is coming up in just 9 seconds. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio on a Monday morning. And my dad, that means my dad's going to call in, tell a jokey time. We are going to talk about karaoke a little bit later on. And we're starting the movie reviews a little bit later this morning because we had our good friend Herb Weisbaum with us. So we're starting a little bit late, but it is Monday morning, and that means we're doing the Monday morning movie reviews. And that's when Colin and Eric join us every week to review the new movies. And Eric sticks around and talks about box office as well, so we'll get into that. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You can talk or text us there. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show, but the best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, and that's facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, Eric and Colin, we got some movies to review and some box office to talk about, so let's get them on the phone. And here's Eric. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Hello there.
All right. So let's get started. Let's see. Colin, why don't we start with Lizzie?
All right. Well, this is another retelling of the Lizzie Borden murders. And I won't assume that everyone knows the story. I actually didn't know the story that much myself before seeing this, but I knew it had been made into movies and TV movies before. So I came into this actually kind of fresh. But here, Lizzie Borden is played by Chloe Savigny, and the story takes place in 1892, and Lizzie Borden and her sister live with their parents, particularly the abusive father, played by Jamie Sheridan, and the mother, and I had the mother's name in front of me, and I forgot what it was.
Fiona Shaw. Fiona Shaw.
Thank you, Fiona Shaw, right. And the family takes in an Irish maid named Bridget Sullivan, played by Kristen Stewart. And she and Lizzie Borden become friends and eventually something more, you know. But, you know, Lizzie is not afraid to stand up to her father. And at the start of the story, we see a murder take place. And the film traces the events to examine how or if Lizzie Borden could have or did commit these murders, and could the maid have been involved as well. So that's, you know, the kind of mystery is, you know, did they or didn't they, or did she or didn't she? And I don't know if this movie is bringing anything fresh to the story. Again, I'm kind of fresh myself, so all I can really comment on is just the movie that I saw, and I think it's okay. It's not, you know, I think it's kind of missing a little bit of a bite to it. It seems a little, I don't know, a little held back in terms of, you know, being really kind of, you know, something that stands out, being either overly salacious or just, you know, it feels like it's missing a voice somewhere in there to kind of give it more of a punch. Because most of it kind of feels like a standard period drama. And maybe it's supposed to, I don't know. But I do like the atmosphere of the film, and I really do like the performances a lot. I think Chloe Sevigny and Kristen Stewart are really good in this film. Although, you know, casting Chloe Sevigny in this role just immediately makes you not trust her, because this is the kind of role that we've seen her in, you know, quite a bit. And she's very good in it. I'm kind of lightly recommending the film, just kind of based on the performances and the atmosphere of it. I guess for someone like me who's, you know, coming in fresh to the story, it's nice. You know, it's interesting to see it told. So, not a great film, certainly not a terrible film, but worth watching for the performances. Particularly Stewart, actually. I think she's, again, just kind of, you know, just giving us one really terrific performance after another post-Twilight. So I guess we can stop saying that now. She's done enough. She's done her penance. You know? So we could really stop being surprised by now. She's a terrific actress, and this is another this is more further proof of that.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I love both of the leads a lot, and I think like you said, I think Chloe Sevigny being cast as Lizzie Borden is, you know, pretty cool.
Yeah,
obviously I know the little song and the poem that goes along with it, and I've, you know, and you know the legend of the whole story, but I just remember in the 70s. There was a TV movie with Elizabeth Montgomery from Bewitched as Lizzie Borden, and I remember it was like it was one of the first times I had seen a TV movie where they were like parental discretion is advised, because you know it was like in the mid 70s, I want to say, mid to late 70s, 77, 78, maybe 76, and I just remember that being like a big deal, like ooh. Oh, yeah. It's a TV movie that they're warning us about, you know?
Right.
And I don't remember the content of the movie. I remember watching it, and I remember the warning, but I don't remember whether the movie was any good or not. I just remember it was like, it was shocking to see Samantha from Bewitched, you know, in this role. That was that was the thing.
And then there's another version with Christina Ricci, I believe, of the miniseries.
That's right.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about that. So, all right. Well, this is the latest version of that. So that's Lizzie, which is playing in theaters right now. Okay, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about Love, Gilda. I'm sick that I didn't get to see it this weekend, and so.
Yeah, and you know, when we say, you know, you just said the title Love, Gilda, and I think that unless you have someone in your family with that name, we all know exactly who we're talking about. And of course, that's Gilda Radner. And I mean, just up front, I mean, there's not a lot to say about, you know, the documentary, you know, that, you know, we don't already know. The fact that this is a documentary about the life of Gilda Radner, her, you know, her early days and how she came to discover comedy, you know, as an awkward child. It's kind of a similar story that a lot of comedians have told throughout time. Obviously, her time during Saturday Night Live, leading up to it, then eventually her battle with ovarian cancer. And the thing about this documentary is that it's really interesting that this is kind of the third documentary we've had this year that kind of follows a very similar approach. We've had the Robin Williams documentary Come Inside My Mind from Sundance that played on HBO. Also on HBO, the fantastic Judd Apatow, Gary Shandling documentary, the 4-hour sort of kind of masterwork that he did.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting that, you know, in some ways, you know, this movie actually has a connecting thread to that particular documentary, because you know, the period where Gilda Radner, after she had gone through cancer, then appeared on his Gary Shandling show.
Famously.
So, like, you know, to see, you know, this documentary take that arc and get to this point, you know, kind of, it really kind of struck me a bit. And when I say that this is, you know, it's not, I don't just mean that this is a documentary about another really beloved comedian that was taken from us too quickly, much more quickly, even more than Robin and Gary were. But this is, you know, the way that the documentary approaches it is that it actually, you know, is told a lot through Gilda's voice. In the same way that the Robin Williams and Gary Shandling docs were, we hear them sort of narrating their own story, and we hear them, their instances from their own diary, Gilda's diary, interspersed throughout the film. And then if the movie begins with Melissa McCarthy, Amy Poehler, and Bill Hader each being given parts of her diary. And you see when it's handed to them that they feel like they've been given something out of the original Bible transcripts.
Right, right.
They have such a reverence for what this is. And Bill Hader, you see they almost start breaking down crying because they feel like they're being, the hand of this thing. Bill Hader literally says, "This is an actual honor right now, what you're giving to me." And, it's a reminder of, obviously not what just the talent she was, but, the last third of the movie that deals with her dealing with cancer is a really personal personal thing that the documentary gets into, because there's actual, home video footage of her in the hospital. And, one really particularly striking moment where she's visited in the hospital by Gene Wilder and her dog. And it's just, these moments like this that really kind of transcend, what could be just another, talking head documentary about how great she was. We really do kind of get inside, Radner's, train of thought and, what made her so funny. She had, I hope I can remember the quote right, where she says that, comedy is, finding the truth before the other guy gets there. Mm. And I might have bungled that a little bit, but the things like that throughout the movie, again, transcripts from her diaries and hearing her voice, read these things and tell her story in her own voice, is really what kind of makes a film like this stand apart. And I think that we have now kind of a remarkable little trilogy of films this year about, these fantastic comedians, these groundbreaking trendsetters that were beloved back then and will be beloved for forever, pretty much. If anyone who has any kind of fandom, any kind of remembrance of Gilda Radner, and even if you don't, this is a chance to sort of discover who this person was. It's not just a clip show, although there are many great clips from over the years. This is a very personal piece of work, and one that I very much recommend.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. I really can't. Okay, that's Love, Gilda, which is playing exclusively at the Landmark Century Cinema right now. Okay, guys, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right,
mm-hmm.
We're going to take a break here. Eric and Colin are with us. We started a little bit later this morning, but we're going to continue after this break here, reviewing all the new movies right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on a Monday morning, which means my dad will tell a joke. But right now, we are reviewing the new movies, as we do every Monday morning on the Monday Morning Movie Reviews with Eric and Colin. All right, let's welcome the guys back. Eric, welcome back. And
thank you.
Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, Colin, tell us about Life Itself.
All right, well, this is obviously not to be confused with the documentary about Roger Ebert that we saw 5 years ago. This is a drama from Dan Fogelman, who's the creator of This Is Us, which I've never seen before. And at first, it's a story of a couple named Will and Abby, played by Oscar Isaac and Olivia Wilde, who meet in college, get married, and have a kid. But then tragedy strikes and leaves Will to pick up the pieces and begin a new life. But
it's not easy. He's been institutionalized. He's prone to outbursts and is trying to start over by going to see a therapist played by Annette Bening. Then the movie, or the story, moves ahead a generation to tell the story of their daughter, Dylan, played by Olivia Cooke, who is college age and is the lead singer of a punk band, and she lives with her grandfather, played by Mandy Patinkin. Then the movie shifts continents and focuses on a rural area in Spain where a wealthy landowner, played by Antonio Banderas, is about to promote one of his workers, a soft-spoken guy named Javier, played by Sergio Perez Menchada. And how that story dovetails with the rest of them, I probably shouldn't say. But know that that story in particular takes up a good 50% of this film and is being sort of downplayed in the trailers and on the poster, which is weird to me, but that whatever, that's not what we're here to talk about. So, this is one of those movies that tells multiple stories that are connected through time and through the relationships of the people. And also wants to, it's a movie that strives for profundity, but ends up feeling like just a big fortune cookie. Not terribly profound, but, you know, just more of a trifle. But that's what it feels like. There's a character, the Olivia Wilde character, has this great epiphany for her college thesis about the importance of the unreliable narrator. And her professor eventually just kind of gives her a D on it or something like that, or, you know, just kind of dismisses it. And that's kind of how we feel as the audience watching this film. Like, somebody had a great epiphany to write these characters and to give them profound things to say and make observations about life itself and how profound it is, but we kind of dismiss it going, no. it just feels very forced, and a lot of the story elements that bring these characters together are also very contrived and not as profoundly random as you would think. I mean, you know, one of the biggest events in the film happens at an intersection on a street. Very symbolic and metaphorical. Yeah, also pretty obvious. And so, you know, there's a really good cast here that's kind of wasted in a way, but at the same time, like, they're really trying to make this work. And I admit some of it does. I mean, I think there are scenes in this movie that really work. I think there's a one middle section that's all too brief. It's with Olivia Cooke and Mandy Patinkin. And if the movie had just been that story, I think there would have been something there, because I really like their stuff together. But the rest of the movie just kind of meanders, especially in the second half. It just drags, and we kind of know, you know, what the overall final thought of the film is going to be even before it's spoken. And so it's a movie that is trying to be a really emotionally fulfilling experience, and I left feeling pretty empty, actually. I don't think it's quite the disaster everybody's saying it is. It's nowhere near, like, Book of Henry level disaster or anything like that. It's just a movie that has some ambitions, but they're not all fulfilled, and it just ultimately doesn't really work.
Okay. All right. You guys, hang on. We got to take a break. Come back, and I'll tell you what I thought of Life Itself after we take a break for the news. And that's coming up. More movie reviews. We got more movies to review, and I'll tell you what I thought of Life Itself right after the news, which is coming up next right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio on a Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke, and it's also the Monday morning movie reviews are happening right now. Before the news, Colin gave us his review of Life Itself, the latest movie from Dan Fogelman, who is the creator of the TV show This Is Us, with a pretty big cast. Let's welcome the guys back. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. So I do think this movie's a disaster. I am of the opinion that most people are about this movie. It is a tremendous waste of a talented cast. And this movie really is really pompous, and it's not nearly as profound as Fogelman thinks it is. There's a lot of speechifying that doesn't really go anywhere, and a really, really great cast. The scenes that you were talking about, the only things that I didn't dislike, Colin, so much were exactly what you said. I mean, Olivia Cooke, I just think she's amazing, I love her, and I think she's great in this, and I think her stuff with Patinkin is pretty good. I just don't think there's much here. It's one of these movies that feels that it's trying to do something. And by the way, it's very much like This Is Us, Colin. So if you get a feel for what This Is Us is by seeing this, including the jumping in time and stuff, because they do that on This Is Us as well. So it's very, it's, you can tell. I mean, you know, if you didn't know, you know, the credits of the director of this movie, you'd go, wow, this is really a lot like that show to This Is Us. And not as profound as you would think it is, because it's like, it feels like a TV show to me. And these,
does every episode use a classic rock album as its entire soundtrack? That's a huge misstep movie does.
No, there are sound cues in the show. You know, as you always say, the needle drops.
Yeah,
there's that in This Is Us. So this one, it's just a bunch of really talented performers just flailing around with nothing to work with at all. And I wasn't moved by it. I was bored by most of it. I didn't care. And I think it is a movie that really thinks it's incredibly profound, and it is not. And these kind of movies I have a weakness for, as you guys know. I happen to like, I happen to like movies that tell 12,000 different stories with a bunch of different characters and intersects them and stuff like that. I love those kind of movies. I mean, my favorite movie of all time is that kind of movie. But this just isn't. I mean, it's just, it's dead on arrival, I think. And, and a waste of an enormously talented cast. So, not good at all. So, anyway. That's Life Itself, and don't confuse it with the great documentary about the great Roger Ebert. That's another thing. And even the title is pretentious. You're going to call it.
Why would you do that? Why would you hang on to that title knowing you're going to, we're all going to have to say that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean,
just change it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a really, really pretentious title too. It's like, oh, this movie is about life itself. Oh, shut up. all right. Well, let's move on. Eric, tell us about the clock with the house with the walls. The house with a clock in its walls.
There you go.
That's it.
This is a this new movie based on an old children's book, directed by the guy that brought us Hostel and The Green Inferno. Eli Roth has gone from hard R-rated horror thrillers to basically a PG-rated Amblin family film from the 1980s. This one, it is the story of a young boy whose parents are gone, his mother has passed away, and he is sent to live with his eccentric uncle, played by Jack Black. He moves him into his home that has a lot of peculiarities to it. Things seem to move around a bit, particularly on the walls, and also seems to be inhabited, although she's identified as his neighbor, by a woman played by Kate Blanchett. And they have kind of a hate-love relationship, just nothing but insults to one another. And the boy soon discovers that, the weird stuff going on in the house is not an accident because Uncle is a warlock and his neighbor is a witch. And he discovers this. They take to teaching the boy some new tricks, and the boy becomes very interested and wants to learn more, and even wants to use some of these new teachings to impress friends, people at school that he's having a hard time adapting to. But the thing is that there is a clock in the walls, and it is a clock that has been designed by an old friend of the uncle's, played by Kyle MacLachlan, who is also he was in the war. And when he came back, things were not particularly right with him, and it kind of turned towards the dark side of magic and created a clock in the walls that is basically a doomsday clock. And this leads to, a number of different twists and turns about, this Voldemort-like character who's lurking around, presumably dead, and whether or not the clock is going to count down to the end of the world. And so, go back to the beginning that, this is a movie, directed by Eli Roth that is essentially a throwback to those type of films that, particularly Colin and I really grew up with. The movie was even produced by Amblin Entertainment. But it's a film that, while it has the art direction, it has, the kind of the goofy special effects and the kind of tone with the sort of, the banter between Black and Blanchett, it has all these elements to it, but it just, the whole enterprise just seems curiously flat. It just feels like Eli Roth traced all of these things that he saw in the 1980s, but he just does not have that kind of magic as a filmmaker, with the great ones that, we grew up at that time, the Dantes, the Zemeckis, not to mention Spielberg, and, all the, nobody that, Spielberg inspired and who ended up working, for production for Amblin, I can't think of anyone in that group who made a flatter film than this particular one. It's a movie that does have moments here or there, usually with Black and Blanchett. Blanchett is particularly good. Black, sometimes has to, elevate his personality just to bring a little bit of life to this thing. Big problem with the movie is the kid. I don't have his name in front of me right now, but the kid is really not good at all. And it's a kind of a big sticking point in the film, particularly when he has to emote anything other than, amusement, that it never rings true, and just kind of go like, ooh, they should have found another kid for this story, because we're not really interested in him as a character, and he's not a particularly good actor, and he can't really sell a lot of the wonder and stuff that's going on around him. Every once in a while a moment does kick in, like vomiting pumpkins, which I thought was, a lot of fun. But other than that, I didn't really care about where this thing was headed. I wasn't mystified by any of it. I wasn't taken back to the 1980s because of it. I just think that Eli Roth is not a particularly talented filmmaker, and while he might know the steps, he doesn't know what makes the noise with them. So I'm not recommending this film.
I liked it. I thought it was charming, and I thought it was fun, and I really thought that Jack Black and Kate Blanchett were both terrific. I liked the kid. I thought the kid was fine.
Oh, he's awful.
No, I don't think he's awful at all. I thought the special effects were fun. I thought Kyle MacLachlan was having a good time. I also, by the way, thought that, and this is just my observation, this movie should have been rated PG-13, because there's some really scary stuff in this movie for little kids. There were a lot of little kids in the theater that I saw it in. And it gets, it gets pretty violent, and it gets pretty scary, for little kids. I mean, I was surprised that it was PG, you know, but what some of the content that's in it, particularly some of the stuff that Kyle MacLachlan does. I mean, he looks terrifying in the movie, and there's all kinds of, I mean, there's a lot of creepy stuff in this movie. So I think it should have been rated PG-13. But I found it to be entertaining. I laughed a lot. I had a good time. I thought the effects were fun. There's a particular moment where Jack Black gets transformed at some point late in the movie, where I was laughing my head off with every shot of him in that situation. And it was, for me, I wanted more Cate Blanchett, especially in the first, you know, half of the movie. But then, like, when she steps up in the second half of the movie and goes in all in, it's great. And she's just a blast to watch. And you can tell she's having a really good time. I don't think it's a great movie by any stretch of the imagination, but I thought it was entertaining, and I had a good time watching it. I think there's some really fun stuff in this movie, and I think I think Roth does capture a pretty whimsical and pretty cool mood throughout the movie. And as you mentioned, you know, the set design, the costumes, the special effects, the cinematography are all really, really top notch. It's a really great looking movie, and I saw it in IMAX as well. And here's a weird thing: they showed Michael Jackson's Thriller beforehand in 3D.
What?
Yeah.
I heard about this.
Yeah, they showed.
That's scarier than anything in the movie for the kids.
Well, they did. I know, and there were little kids in the theater, and at the very end, like, one kid screamed at the very end of the video. But you know, what was really funny about it was I had heard, you know, because Jack Black was on doing, you know, promoting this. He was all over the place promoting it, and he was on with Fallon, and I was watching him on Fallon last week, and he said that, hey, if you go see this movie in IMAX, you get to see Michael Jackson's Thriller. And so, like, Jimmy Fallon was like, wow, that's great, you know, that's awesome, that's great. And then and so we go in, and, you know, we get our seats, we go to the IMAX. My folks, by the way, my parents loved this movie, they thought it was great. And so all of a sudden it says, put on your 3D glasses. And the house with the clock in its walls is not 3D. So they didn't give us glasses. So Thriller starts, and it's blurry. It's, you know, and it didn't.
Oh, God.
And so my dad goes out to get the glasses, but he comes back like 7 minutes later. There's like 3 minutes left of Thriller. And he's finally got, so I got to see the last, like, couple of minutes of the video in 3D. The sound, I will say this, the sound was great. It looked good. But I'm not sure what the connect. I mean, I know it's like the 35th anniversary of Thriller. So that's maybe,
yeah, that sounds right,
why they did it. It's the 35th anniversary of Thriller. So maybe that's why they did it. But I don't, there's no connection between Michael Jackson's Thriller and this movie at all in any way. I mean, other than that, they both deal with, you know, scary stuff. But like,
I'm just surprised I haven't heard anything about some 3D conversion for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just...
How was the conversion?
It was great. I mean, the last three minutes, I mean, it looked fantastic. I mean, I have to say, but they didn't give us 3D glasses. It was just so weird, man. So, anyway, I like the movie. I'm going to recommend it. I thought The House with a Clock in Its Walls is solid and entertaining, and I liked it. I think it's might be a little too scary for really young kids, though. So just keep
that. But at least we can admit the kid was terrible. That's great.
I don't think the kid was terrible. So, all right, let's hang on for a second, guys. All right, we'll then take a break, and we come back. We got one more movie to review, and it's Michael Moore's new documentary. So we will take a break here on 720 WGN and more after this. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios with Steve Grzanich coming up at 5 with the opening bell, and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive on this Monday morning. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All of that is coming up, but right now we are reviewing the new movies. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every week to review the new films, and then Eric's going to stick around and talk a little bit about the box office. We'll give you all the box office returns as well. And there's one more movie to talk about, and let's welcome Eric back.
Thank you.
And Colin back.
Hello.
All right, Colin, tell us about Fahrenheit 11-9.
All right. Well, this is, like you said, the latest from Michael Moore. And it's the movie we all kind of knew he would make at some point. And perhaps it's no surprise that it's coming out during the midterm election season.
But it's not quite the two-hour anti-Trump movie that many thought it would be, although it certainly is that at times. But he also examines the water crisis in Flint, Michigan, the high school shootings, and the activists that were born out of the Stoneman Douglas high school shootings. But in broader strokes, he's asking the question of how did we get here and how do we get out as a country now that, how did Donald Trump become president and what can we do about, what's the next step from here? And it's not just out to take shots at the Republicans either. I mean, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and the New York Times get taken to task as well. For their role in that and the aftermath as well, which might make this Michael Moore's most even-handed film in quite a while. But I gotta say, it is nowhere near one of his best. In fact, this might be the most disappointed I've been in a Michael Moore film ever. I'm object more to the form than the content itself. And I think this movie is just a big mess. It becomes very unclear very quickly just what the end game is supposed to be here. Because for the first 10 minutes of the film, it is very somber about, it basically goes back to the election day of 11-8 or 11-9. And then to suddenly shift gears into, all the people who got caught up in sexual harassment cases. And then it shifts gears into the Flint water crisis. And then it's then the shootings. And then it's back to, Trump doing this. And then it's back to what did Hillary Clinton do wrong? And then it's, here's Barack Obama doing this. And it just gets, none of it connects. I mean, there's no connective tissue to these sequences. It just seems to sort of randomly cut from one thing to the next, just as we're getting interested in whatever statement is being made here. Moore has become a very much like your standard doom and gloom documentary filmmaker for whatever side of the fence, your movie you're talking about. But, his wit is gone. His attempts at being a prankster or being a provocateur, his stunt scenes, I think fall really flat and just aren't very inspired at all. And I kind of miss the old Michael Moore, who just kind of had that sort of naive charm about him as a kind of a world-weary traveler who's just kind of trying to figure everything out. Now it's just their standard doom and gloom narration. And then towards the end of the film, of this two-hour film, he just starts to employ a lot of lazy tactics to make his point. He has like one or two talking head experts, who wrote a book and therefore they're the expert, sort of laying out and dictating the outcome of what Moore's argument is going to be. And he cuts to himself nodding in agreement with everything they're saying. He uses the very tired Hitler analogy for Donald Trump, which is not exactly a fresh perspective on that at all. And it just kind of, by the end, I was like, it just seems to be kind of pointless. And didn't really say anything that I didn't already know, or his audience who are going to see this movie don't already know. I think in Moore's heart of hearts, I think he really wanted to make the documentary about the Flint water crisis. I think that's where his heart is, as well as the Stoneman Douglas shootings and the activists that came out of that. So, I mean, this movie could really have been, a sequel to his first, or not his first two, but his two, both highly regarded films, Roger and Me and Bowling for Columbine. And I think it kind of felt like he felt forced to make, also to make a film about the election.
of Donald Trump. And, you know, because that's kind of what his audience expects him to do right now. So I think, you know, the strongest stuff in the movie is about the Flint water crisis and the Stoneman Douglas shootings. I think everything else is just kind of stuff we know already. We've seen it played out. We see it played out every day. And it's, there's nothing new there. So I, as much as I, you know, I'm on Moore's side on a lot of this stuff, that doesn't mean that he made a good film. So I don't really recommend it.
Okay. All right, guys, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll find out what Eric thought. Well, he briefly talked about this one when he was covering Toronto. So, but we'll get Eric's thoughts on it, and I'll give you my thoughts on Fahrenheit 11/9. Colin is not recommending it. It's Michael Moore's new documentary. All right, we'll take a break here for the news on 720 WGN. How's everybody doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on a Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke. We're going to talk a little karaoke as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected, though, is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning from 1 to 5 a.m. And Steve Grzanich follows with the opening bell and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Okay, we are going to wrap up the movie reviews. Eric's going to stick around. We're going to talk box office coming up. But right now, before the news, before the break, Colin gave us his thoughts on Fahrenheit 11/9, which is Michael Moore's new documentary. And Colin was not crazy about it. And welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Eric, you talked about this one. You talked about this one from Toronto. Tell us a little bit about what you think here.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot to agree with what Colin was saying there, but a couple things I will disagree with, because I do think that this is better than Moore's last two films, Where to Invade Next and Capitalism, A Love Story. You know, I mean, it's inescapable. You know, disagree with Colin that the film does ramble at times. I mean, if you go there thinking that this is just going to be 2 hours of, the greatest hits of Trump and, you know, the idiocy that the last 20 some months have brought us, you'd be sorely mistaken. And I think that's one of the good things that he does do with this movie, is that he doesn't just give you, you know, everything that's gone on in that period while he's been in office, because by then, you know, the time the film gets released, it'll all be old news. And like Colin said, we know so much of that stuff. We've been living through it seemingly every hour since this idiot took office. And, so I think that it's interesting to examine, you know, exactly as he says in the movie, how did this happen? You know, how did we get here? And I think some of that stuff does pass muster. And then the movie does kind of take these radical shifts. And what seems to me, in many ways, it kind of feels like Michael Moore, doing a greatest hits tour and, revisiting, kind of giving mini sequels to elements from his past. You know, there's a whole section on Flint. There's a whole section on guns. There's all these things that he has dealt with in the past. And now he's sort of giving the way that, Netflix or someone, updates their, past documentaries with new segments. And that's what he seems to be doing here. And I think that Colin's right that, he clearly, he'd been working on stuff about Flint and the water crisis for several years now, and either he didn't have enough for an entire film, or he just felt that, I got to get this out here, and we'll just stick it in here in the middle of this movie. It's actually the strongest stuff in the movie. I agree that the stunt that he pulls at the end of it doesn't really resonate, because, there's no aftermath to that, but I think the stuff that deals with that, jerk that is in office in Michigan, in Flint, there's some really powerful stuff in there, involving cover-ups and political corruption and kind of stuff. The way that he tries to tie Trump to some of these other things, I think, is almost unfair to Trump, and I think giving Trump a lot more credit than he actually deserves, that, he observed the way that this guy got away with stuff in Michigan and decided to, I can get away with that stuff too. That's really flimsy stuff. And then there are things that you know, happened, you know, when he's, you know, criticizing certain things on, you know, the left, that I think he comes to, you know, those more conclusions, those sort of those convenient factual leaps in logic sometimes that I think under further scrutiny will not prove to be, you know, completely full of merit. And you know, I think that, you know, and sometimes I think that he's trying to give Michigan a pass for voting the way they did, and he comes up with an excuse for that, and I'm sorry, I just don't think anybody, no matter, you know, what, you know, how slighted they felt, deserves a pass for staying home in the last election. I feel very strongly about that. So, but that's the reaction that Moore is going for. I mean, this is an angry movie. It, you know, it might be angrier than any film he's made to date, and with good reason, because, you know, so many of us are feeling that anger. And yes, it is preaching to the choir, but where I would disagree with Colin as far as the, you know, sort of the thesis of the film, while it can get lost, you know, through his sidetracks. And I think that the section where he's basically encouraging people not just to vote, not just to be, you know, make your mark at the ballot box, but to actually get on the ballot, you know, to be, you know, the women's movement, and all these candidates, you know, not just progressive candidates, but, you know, any candidates, you know, candidates of, you know, of color and different, you know, women and, you know, persuasions, all kinds of things that can get on the ballot. Anything we can do to change, to get these old white men out of business and get this country back on track to where it should be, you know, I think that's a message worth visiting, even if the film, does tend to ramble away from that. But I am recommending the film based on its strengths more than its weaknesses.
Okay, well, you guys know how I feel about Michael Moore. I've been very critical of his movies in the past because he's completely one-sided a lot of the times, and he's not fair to a lot of what he covers, and he manipulates a lot of stuff so that his message is heard, and you guys know how I feel about him as a filmmaker. I don't think he's a very good filmmaker. I think this movie's a mess. I do agree that the Flint stuff is the best stuff in the movie. I think that he should have made a documentary about that. And I guess, you know, if that was the case where you just wanted to stick it into the movie, it doesn't make any sense. And it does meander all over the place. And there's nothing particularly new about what is said about Trump in this movie. Everybody knew this movie was coming. There was no way that Michael Moore wasn't going to make an angry movie about the Trump administration, but it's not really about that. It meanders all over the place. And you're right, Colin. He is a lot, you know, grumpier and morose than he ever has been in the past. And I know I've never been a big fan of the stunts that he pulls, you know, because it's one of the things that makes me crazy about Michael Moore. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the tone of this movie, the tone of this movie is very angry and also just really dour, which I guess makes sense considering the climate that we're in right now. But I have to say that there's not much new here. And the strongest stuff, like I said, is the Flint, Michigan stuff is definitely the strongest stuff in the movie. Here's the thing, though. I watch The Daily Show, I watch John Oliver, and I watch Stephen Colbert. And what these guys are doing right now at this, and Seth Meyers, what these guys are doing, the late night guys are doing now, and again, you have to do this daily because the insanity can, every day something crazy happens, you know, every single day. Sometimes more than one crazy thing happens a day.
A couple things happen this very evening.
Well, exactly. But it's one of these deals where it's like, you know, this movie, you know, in 3 weeks is going to be, it's going to be almost irrelevant. And that, for me, the voices that I'm getting, the voices that I'm following, are the guys who do this on a nightly or weekly basis, and cover it that way. I mean, I really think that John Oliver, you know, he's only on once a week, but I think that John Oliver is doing a great job. Colbert is just killing it now. He's never been better. I think Trevor Noah is ridiculously underrated and deserves more credit than he gets. Seth Meyers is doing a great job. Even Jimmy Kimmel is stepping up, you know, and he's not really known. He's the guy from The Man Show, but he's now become this, you know, political dude. And these are the guys, these are the voices that to me, are saying things that need to be said and are covering things the way they should be covered. And this is just seems irrelevant to me, except for the stuff about Flint. That was the best stuff in the movie. But it is it's a long movie, too. Is it like his longest movie? It's like 2 hours and 10 minutes. And it's just, I think it's a mess. And, I can't recommend it. But again, as you guys know, I've never been the biggest Michael Moore fan in ever. So.
I will say this much. I mean, there is a film that is available right now that if you really want to get your Trump ire up, and will tell you things that in a great journalistic sense, that many people might not know about, there's a film available on iTunes. And I think Hulu, called Active Measures, that is all about the basically it's the Mueller report done in documentary form.
Okay.
Essentially. And you know, so if people want to know more about the entire history of Trump and Russia, that's a documentary that I think is much more vital and much, much more much better put together.
Okay. All right. Well, the Michael Moore movie, we'll talk about how it did at the box office. As well, a little bit later on. All right, next week we've got Crazy Night School with Kevin.
I'm still convinced that's not a real movie.
With Kevin Hart and Tiffany Haddish. Is it required that Tiffany Haddish is in a movie every 2 weeks?
I hope not.
I happen to really like her. So we've got the Sisters Brothers. We got the animated movie Smallfoot. We've got Colette. And Hellfest, which is a nice little horror movie. So that's all coming up. Colin, we will talk to you then next week.
Sounds good.
Okay, there you go. Colin, there's Colin. And Eric, why don't we start talking a little bit about box office here?
Sure.
The House with a Clock in Its Walls, $26.8 million. Did you ever think an Eli Roth movie would open with almost $27 million?
No. Not until I found out that he was attached to this movie, and even then, I was pegging this for like low 20s. But no, I mean, it seemed to rise over the weekend, and it's a very solid start.
Yeah.
For this movie. I mean, this is right in the sort of the wheelhouse of, you know, it's very, you know, close to what like Goosebumps did. So, you know, if they can squeeze $80 million out of this domestically, it's still going to need probably somewhere between 40 and another 45 or 60 million overseas to turn a profit on this. It's only the $42 million production. But I, you know, I don't see this thing, you know, stretching itself to $100 million.
Yeah.
But it's a very respectable number. And we'll just see if the word of mouth kicks up and that it progresses next week.
Yeah. Well, I think, I think another reason why the box office is going to get boosted is because Eli Roth's cameo. That's going to be the And you knew
he's quite the actor.
You knew he was going to be in it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you knew it. Yeah.
He's a worse actor than the kid. I'll say that much. I'll give you that, you know?
And he doesn't even have any dialogue in the movie.
No.
No. Yeah. All right. Number two is A Simple Favor, $10.4 million. What's that up to total?
Well, it's like $32 million right now, but it's a very solid drop. I mean, the film was actually number three last week.
Yeah.
So it actually moved up to the number two slot. It only dropped 35%. So you know, this seems to be, you know, a movie that is kind of slowly finding its audience. It's probably gonna, you know, headed its, you know, for somewhere over $50 million. So this is kind of turning into a little bit of a discovery. We'll see what it drops next week.
Okay. You know, I'm just looking at this. I just realized this. Did Life Itself not make the top 10?
It did not.
Oh my God! What did it make?
No. $2.1 million.
Oh my God!
It is the worst opening for a film this year, opening in over 2,500 screens.
That's crazy! I didn't even realize that. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, Searching, nudged it out at the last minute.
Wow, man, that's unbelievable! Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's a big thing for Amazon too, because Amazon actually paid ten. Here's the funny story: is that this movie was going to be in Sundance. Life Itself.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And Amazon ended up paying $10 million and yanked it from the festival. So it didn't have the early reviews. It didn't have to compete, with all that stuff. And they, you know, apparently they thought that they were going to have this, you know, This Is Us type hit on their hands.
Yeah.
And nobody, because the critics who saw it in Toronto, ooh, did they start going after it. And then, of course, that led to Fogelman, you know, releasing a statement about fancy white critics.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know, even though most of the people that hated the movie were women.
Yeah. and then Amazon's got Suspiria coming up, so we'll see how that does for them.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
A long one.
Yeah, it's 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
2.5 hours long, and the original is 1 hour and 40. So, okay. Anyway, The Nun came in third. The Predator, fourth with $8.7 million. Crazy Rich Asians still doing good business.
About to be hitting $160 million sometime today.
And then let's go on and just talk a little bit about Michael Moore's movie. Fahrenheit 11.9. What do you think box office-wise? What's that saying?
Well, I think it's one of those glass half-empty, half-full things. I mean, if you look at it as a documentary, that's a pretty solid opening. If you look at it through the lens of what Fahrenheit 9/11 did, it's kind of pathetic.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, and, you know, why, you know, I can't really project myself back to 2004 other than 9/11 was still so very much on our minds.
Right.
There was so much hatred towards Bush on the left at that point. And it seemed, you know, everything was ripe for, yeah, and Michael Moore, you know, was coming off of Bowling for Columbine. So, you know, he was right at the top of everything.
Right.
And now, you know, even if the film was good, even if the film was as good as Bowling for Columbine or Roger and Me, you know, for those of us that have liked Roger, you know, Michael Moore in the past, I just don't think that, you know, people want to go pay money to see a movie about Trump.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, because we are, like I said, we are living this, you know, and even if you're not watching the news, even if you're watching, you know, all the shows that you mentioned, which I, you know, echo what you're saying 100% on all those shows, you know, if you're just watching those shows, you're getting more out of this experience and more laughs than you would to go pay $12 to see Michael Moore.
I think that's absolutely what happened, Eric. I think that is absolutely what happened. People don't want to see, don't pay $12 to see a movie about Trump. I think that's obvious. So anyway, all right. Well, listen. Next week we'll review all the movies and we'll be back. And so, House on the Clock. What do you think is going to be number one next week?
I think Night School.
Night School. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, yep. I think that people will show for Night School.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. All right, Eric. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good one. All right.
Sounds good. You too.
Go. All right. Here's Eric Childress, everybody, doing the box office every week and the movie reviews every week. We'll do it again next Monday. All right. Let's take a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Monday morning, and that means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. It's a jokey time. And we are going to talk about karaoke. And some other cool stuff as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. But the best way to stay connected is in our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Hey, a couple of minutes before the news here, and I just wanted to remind everybody that my tickets for my next screening of Phantasm are on sale right now. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, and you know, we're showing it in October, the month of Halloween, and it is just one of the best horror movies ever made, and it's the 4K digitally remastered version from a couple of years ago that J.J. Abrams oversaw. And it looks magnificent. The movie looks better than it did in 1979 when it came out. A crazy, crazy horror movie written and directed by Don Coscarelli. And we're going to be watching it on the big screen a week from tomorrow. So it's October 2nd, Tuesday, October 2nd. I'll be hosting a screening of Phantasm on the big screen. It's only $10 to get in. Parking is free. It's at the AMC Rosemont 18, which is formerly the Movie Co. Theater in Rosemont. It's really easy to get to. Parking is free. You can have some cocktails and some food before the movie. And then at 8 o'clock, we'll all file into the big, beautiful premiere theater with the state-of-the-art, incredible, huge screen and digital projection and sound. I will introduce the movie. We will watch the remastered 4K version of Phantasm. And we'll talk about it afterwards. And I have many, 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 many behind-the-scenes stories about Phantasm. I've seen this movie a few times. That's an understatement. I am not exaggerating when I say in the summer of 79 when the movie came out, I saw it over 100 times in the theater. It's I know every single moment, every line of dialogue. I love it. It's one of my favorite movies ever, and one of the greatest horror movies ever, and one of the a great movie to watch on Halloween time, especially on the big screen, especially in the 4K restoration that we're going to be showing. So it's Tuesday, October 2nd. Starts at 8 o'clock. Tickets for $10. Parking is free. It's at the AMC Rosemont, 18, formerly Movico. And you can get your tickets right now. They're on sale right now. Reserve your seats now. So they're waiting for you. And it's at AMCtheaters.com. That's AMCtheaters.com for your seats to Phantasm. So that's coming up on a week from tomorrow, October 2nd. All right. I hope everybody can make it. We'll take a break here. We got the news coming up next. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. It is Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, and welcome back, everybody. Yeah. So, you know, Dan, you know like on a lot of the social media on Facebook and stuff like that, they've been doing these, this TV show premiered 23 years ago. You know how that's like, sure. It's all over the place now?
Yeah.
Well, they were talking about, the one that they posted was Archie Bunker's Place premiered however many, 30 years ago or whatever. And, or 35 years ago, or whatever it is. And that, obviously, that's the spinoff from All in the Family. Well, one of the spinoffs from All in the Family, because All in the Family has like 9 spinoffs. But so what I noticed, I was watching the opening, they had the old school. What they usually do is that they usually have a trailer for a movie. If it's like, oh, 30 years ago, it came out this, or they have the opening credits. And that's what they had, the opening credits for Archie Bunker's Place. And that show stunk as far as I was concerned. Like the last couple of seasons of All in the Family, not very good. And then the Archie Bunker's Place was just not good either. But I noticed because it's like they lived in Queens, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, Queens, right?
I will double check.
I think they lived in Queens, and so that's where the bar was. So the opening credits are just like going through the streets of like early 80s New York. And so you're going through the streets, you see the credits are popping up, like who's in the show and all that stuff. And then it ends where the camera pulling up in front of Archie Bunker's place, and you see the bar because it used to be Kelsey's, like back in the All in the Family days, it was owned by this guy Kelsey, and then Archie Bunker went into business and he bought the bar, and that was the spinoff. But the thing that I noticed, and I never even noticed this before, was the hours of Archie Bunker's place. It was a 4 a.m. bar.
Oh.
Like what is Archie Bunker? Was it? It's 9 a.m. to 4 a.m. were the hours. And I just watched the opening credits. I'm like, are you kidding me? And he was there every day. I'm like, did he close that bar? Like every night, 4 o'clock, get home at like 5 in the morning, and then get back up and go back at 9? I just didn't know that it was a 4 a.m. joint. Yes. I was like, wow, Archie Bunker, it didn't seem like Kelsey's was a 4 a.m. bar. You know what I'm saying?
No, that strikes me as a 2 o'clocker. It was Queens, by the way.
It was Queens, yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I just was like, wow, I didn't know that Archie Bunker had a 4 o'clock license. Wow. But everything stays open in New York late. That's the thing. You know? Yeah. You know, when we went there in 99, in the summer of 1999, to the Fringe Festival to take Vinyl Shop, I don't think I went to bed before 5:30 in the morning every day. We were out all the time. You could go out. I mean, it's true. It's true what they say about New York. It doesn't sleep.
Right.
So, but anyway, I don't know why I found that so hilarious. I'm watching this.
That is a pretty interesting detail.
That was
for
like
sure.
9 a.m. to 4 a.m. Jesus, barely enough time to mop up between, you know, when you have to open again. So, anyway, that was just a little, that has nothing to do with anything, except that we're going to be talking about karaoke right now. And you think Archie Bunker would have done karaoke?
Oh, you know it.
So, this was in Red Eye, Amateur Hour, exploring Chicago's karaoke scene. Is anybody a big karaoke person? 312-981-7200. Where do you like to go? And most importantly, what are some of your go-to karaoke songs? Do you have like one signature song? Or do you have like a few that are your go-tos whenever you go to karaoke? 312-981-7200. Does it also... Do you also have to have a few drinks to get up in front of people to do that? Some people need to loosen up a little bit with a couple of cocktails before they step up in front of people and do the karaoke. So here's the article from Red Eye, and it's got some of those places where you can go. And if you've been to any of these places, we'd love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Maybe it's the alcohol or late night lack of inhibitions, but there's not a much better way to bond with friends old and new than spending an evening belting out the biggest hits and occasional deep cuts from popular music, the popular music canon. Karaoke in its modern form has existed since the 1970s when Japanese musician Daisuke Inuo invented a song-playing machine that soon became a global phenomenon, translating to empty orchestra. Karaoke continues to thrive not only for allowing people to have a rock star moment, but also for being an outlet for people to express their deepest emotions. It's not surprising that he won the Ig Nobel Prize, a parody award that honors achievements that make people laugh and then think. Now, in an age of more advanced entertainment technology, karaoke continues to attract fans young and old. And then Red Eye decided to explore three of Chicago's karaoke destinations to better understand its appeal. So that's what we're talking about. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We also have, according to Karaoke Star, DVDs.com, the list of the top 25 karaoke songs of all time. So, but do you guys do the karaoke thing? And where do you go? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you would like to join us, we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. We used to go years ago, like, you know, like 18 years ago or something like that. We used to go to Carol's. Hey, Dan, did Carol's reopen yet?
Yes, I believe it did.
It did. Speaking of 4 o'clock bars, Carol's Pub, which is in, what is it, technically Uptown? Is that technically Uptown? Or is it still Andersonville? Or
I would go Uptown.
Yeah, I think it's closer because it's a little further east, or it's a little further south. So, anyway, So we used to go to Carol's. Did you go to Carol's, Dan, ever?
Yes.
For karaoke?
A few times, yeah. Not for karaoke.
Oh, but you've been there. Yeah, you've been to the bar. Yeah. Because listen, let me explain something to you. When I first moved into Andersonville, Carol's Pub was a dive. Like an actual, like a real dive. And then suddenly it became hip. And I remember how it changed, because when I first started going in there, there'd be like three people in that bar at 4 o'clock in the morning, and between the 10 of us, there'd be three teeth. I mean, it was kind of like if you didn't want to go all the way to the mill, because if you lived in the neighborhood that I lived in, if you didn't want to go all the way to the mill, Carol's was closer, and it was usually less busy, because it was a dive. I mean, it was a dump. So then I started to notice that hipster people started to show up there, and then they added the karaoke, and then that brought more young hipster people, because it was an old man dive bar, like a true old man dive bar. And then it completely transformed, and I know you know this, Dan, into a hipster bar. Like it became... Yes. It became like young people all over the place, hipsters, and I know the regulars hated it. I know the regulars were like, who are all these kids coming in here singing their karaoke? But yeah, that was the place where we would go for karaoke on a pretty regular basis. And we used to, my go-to was Higher by Creed. I used to sing that one and do the whole, like, all the act like Scott Stapp, although not sweat like him. Because nobody can sweat like Scott Stapp. So that was my go-to. But, of course, I've told this story before. The dude who would... This was every Thursday night. We would go every Thursday night. the dude who would show up in his stonewashed pants, his jeans, and his wolf t-shirts. You know those t-shirts that just have wolves and mountains on them and stuff?
Full moon.
That kind of stuff. He had like a collection of those. That was his go-to karaoke outfit, was a variation on a wolf t-shirt and some stonewashed jeans. And this guy, you know, this was his weekly thing, man. He thrived on this. You could tell he was in his element. And he would, my favorite detail was he would go up, and every week he would sing Wanted Dead or Alive. He would sing a couple of songs during the night, but his big showstopper, the thing that brought the house down every week, was when he did Wanted Dead or Alive by Jovi. And the best move, and I've told you this before, Dan, the best move is he would push the monitor away, because he didn't need the lyrics, man. So he would just like push the monitor, and every time he did it, everybody would go, yeah, you know, they would go nuts, because that was his signature move.
Sure.
Signaling to everybody, I don't need the lyrics prompted to me. And he would push the monitor away. And he did it every week. And then he would kill. He would just like, and he did it like for real. I mean, like, he belted it out. And everybody, that guy never paid for a beer. Any Thursday night at Carol's, after Wanted Dead or Alive, that guy drank for free for the rest of the night. You know, I can't tell you the number of beers I bought that guy over the years. But anyway, that's where we used to go. I used to go with my ex-girlfriend, Helena, and her theater company, which I've mentioned before, Barrel of Monkeys. A big group of people would come out, and everybody would, you know, go up and sing. And so I'm trying to remember. I used to just do Higher was the one that I did. I did Live from Pearl Jam a couple of times. And Hey Jealousy by... Gin Blossoms. That was a big one too. And it was fun. It was, you know, karaoke's fun, man. Yeah. Where do you like to go?
So I think the place that I've been to the most is the Hidden Cove on Lincoln.
I've been there several times for it too. Yeah.
Yes. I've been to the other one on Lincoln. I forget what it's called. It's on the list, the Lincoln Lodge or something.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just the karaoke rooms. That's
more traditional.
Correct. It's not a bar. It's just room after room after room.
Right.
Of people.
And that's the traditional karaoke. Right. Like if you saw Lost in Translation, with Scarlett Johansson and Bill Murray.
Right.
The rooms that they go to for karaoke, that's the traditional Japanese way that most people would experience. You go into the room with each other, your friends.
Right.
So they have a lot of facilities like that, I think.
They do. That's the only one I've been to in that capacity. And then I have never been there for karaoke, but I know Trader Todd's on Belmont.
Okay.
Right by the, is it the Riv or the Vic over there?
That's the Vic.
That's the Vic.
Yeah, the Riv is at Lawrence and Broadway.
Right.
Yeah, so it's by the Vic.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So there's some of those places. Now, what do you guys go to? 312-981-7200. Red Eye has explored the karaoke scene here in Chicago. We'll tell you about some of the places that they talk about, and we would love to hear from you. Where do you guys go? What is your go-to? Do you have any karaoke stories that you want to share? And we also have the 25 most popular karaoke songs of all time.
Very quickly, 815, Carol lets us know Carol's is still closed and thinks we should buy it.
The last thing I need to do, Dan, is to buy a bar. It's not a good idea. Not a good idea for me to be anywhere near a bar.
I mean, Esmeralda, you know, has some free time now. So
yeah.
What if all four of us go in on it?
Yeah.
And then
I can't go there.
Well, but you could do the Archie Bunker shift from 4 to 9 a.m. You can clean up the place.
I can clean up the place.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you don't want to even put you, Dan, actually, you don't want to put me near liquor. It's not good. I try to stay away from liquor as much as I possibly can.
Good call.
The only bar that I ever go to now is the bar in Gale Street Inn. That's the only time I ever, and I don't even sit at the bar. I sit at a table. But I have not sat at a bar in over 3 years. I have not.
Good for you.
Yeah. So I used to, I'm more than made up for it, trust me. I've got a long way to go to equal how much time I've actually spent at bars. I've got a real long way to go. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on a Monday morning, and my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And, yeah, and coming up at 5 o'clock is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. And then at 6, it's Steve Cochran for your morning drive. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Okay, karaoke is what we're talking about. We would love to hear from you. Do you have a go-to song or two for your karaoke? Where do you go? Red Eye did a exploring. They explored Chicago's karaoke scene and did a review of a few of the places where you can do the karaoke, and that's what we're talking about now. And we would love to hear from you, 312-981-7200. Here's Mark the Breadman. Hey, Mark.
Morning, Nick. How you doing?
All right.
Yeah, our place to go was Sidekicks, which is just off the Kennedy. Then, of course, after that, we go to Susie's down the street for cheese fries and a bowl.
There you go, right there. That's not far from my neighborhood right there, Mark. Yes.
Well, I'd say it's a great place to go to, but I understand you're not going there.
Sidekicks is on Montrose.
Yes.
And then, and Susie's is right down the street, so you can get some food late at night. Now, do you have a go-to karaoke song, Mark?
Whiskey in the Jar, the original one.
Ah, okay. Whiskey, not the Thin Lizzy version, the original version.
Yes.
Yeah. And now, did your friends, do they have any signature songs?
It's usually Bon Jovi, which is, you know, kind of played out after a while, but... Or, of course, Neil Diamond.
Yeah, well, yes. Those are two of the... I have the list here of the 25 karaoke songs of all time. The top 25 karaoke songs of all time. And Jovi and Neil Diamond are on there, for sure. I mean, those are... You hear... I don't think you can go to a karaoke session without hearing at least one or two of those songs every time you go.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, cool. Mark, thanks for the call.
Thanks, Nick. I'll see you next week at Phantasm.
Okay, good. Cool, man. See you then. There you go. Mark's coming out to see Phantasm. Yeah! Phantasm. Such a great movie. Very excited. Dan, in this article, have you been to any of the three big places that they mentioned?
I have not been to any of the three big places.
Okay, because they mention Cafe Mustache, which they call the hipster hotspot. Cafe Mustache was at 2313 North Milwaukee. In Chicago, Spicy Boy Karaoke from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. Sundays, 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. Tuesdays. Also at Five Star Bar, which is 1424 West Chicago. It might be surprising to see a diverse room of youthful creative types singing the biggest hits of the 20th century, often written decades before they were born, but that's the scene at Spicy Boy Karaoke and Cafe Mustache every Sunday night. For the past 5 years, musician Joshua Lambert has hosted the event with bandmate and best friend Ryan Murphy. Although their group Vamose has a poppy punk vibe, Lambert is comfortable jumping in and vocals of just about on any number. I'm blown away at how good it makes people feel to sing a song that really means so much to them in a communal environment, Lambert says. It's really helped my own songwriting a lot because you see what themes work and what compositions work. Spicy Boy Karaoke also attracts many professional musicians. He said, it's in the heart of Logan Square, which is kind of the heart of where all the artists live now. After moving to Chicago without any connections to the city, singer Ryan Hadara not only found her first local friend group at Spicy Boy, but also the bandmate she'd work with on a solo project. You have to go in with some sort of vulnerability because you're doing this ridiculous thing, she said. You can't really have too much pride and dignity and ego when you're up there on stage doing Cher. Those who simply love music, like Tara Newtbaum, who works in marketing, have also found a community on karaoke night. Newtbaum helps organize the song binders. You can singing the Cardigans, Love Fool, or George Thorogood and the Destroyers, Bad to the Bone. She said Lambert works hard to create a welcoming and comfortable environment. It might be intimidating to go through the 200,000 plus songs and step on the stage at the corner of Cafe Mustache, but Lambert suggests starting with popular tunes and going for more obscure tracks later. Then you'll feel like the crowd is with you. And if you forget a verse, Lambert will happily sing along. It seems like I know like 40,000 songs, he said. I probably know like 15,000, but since I can hear the harmony in my head and the lyrics are on the monitor, I can just rip it with you. He's just going to rip it with you.
That's what I want in a karaoke host.
Yeah. The karaoke host who used to do, who host karaoke at Carol's, would love to do the song. Like, he would do a song every once in a while, too. And he did that, Kryptonite song.
Three Doors Down?
Yeah. That was his go-to. That was his go-to song, was Three Doors Down with the "I'm the Superman Kryptonite Man." Oh, man. On a slow night, he'd do a couple more. Like, if it was a slow night, he would, you know, do a couple more. But it was very rarely a slow night. They usually had a lot of... Now, have you ever done the live band karaoke?
I have never done the live band karaoke.
Yeah, I've never even been to a place that does the live band. I mean, I know of it. I've seen footage of it, and I know people who have done it. But that's an entirely different sort of dynamic.
Yeah, that is very much so. Closest thing I had, my friend Ben, one night when we were out on the town in college, he knew a guy in the band, and they let him sing on a Weezer song, but it wasn't a karaoke thing. They were just a band playing the bar and just songs.
He's like, come on up and sing.
Come on up.
Oh, okay.
So, right, cool. But yeah, I don't know if I could do that, you know.
Yeah. Well, what about you guys? 312-981-7200. Where your karaoke go to? What are your songs? And have you ever done the live band karaoke? 312-981-7200. Let's take a break here. The news is coming up after this. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here. 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. And we are talking about karaoke. And we would love to hear from you. What are your favorite karaoke songs? And where do you go for your karaoke? And yeah. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've got a couple of texts here that we got going here. 269 area code says, I'm glad my karaoke days were pre-smartphone. A slightly inebriated me did a few GNR power ballads that no one needs to see or hear. So if he did November Rain, he's up there for 15 minutes.
That is true.
Peter in Decatur said, I've been to the Hidden Cove, but only once when there was karaoke. I even have a cell phone video of it. One time when we were there, there were three patrons, me, my friend, and a guy at the end of the bar fast asleep. That sounds like the Hidden Cove. Doesn't it sound like the Hidden Cove, Dan?
Yep.
So, next one that they have here that they profiled on Red Eye was Spiner's Pub, which is at 4623 Northwestern Avenue. They do karaoke from 10 p.m. to 1:30 a.m. on Thursdays, 10 p.m. to 2:30 a.m. on Friday and Saturday. While it may be a neighborhood hole in the wall, this Ravenswood bar pulls regulars and those looking for a spontaneous night with friends. You see a lot of the same faces, as karaoke host Jim Hensley said, but then you also get the random people who just come in off the street. Hensley has been the host on and off for 14 years, during which he's seen everything from a wedding party stop by post-reception, he serenaded the couple with a slow song, to a woman performing ventriloquist karaoke with a trunk full of puppets. What? Having studied theater in college, he enjoys the creative outlet separate from his job in corporate travel. Now, that's not... At 4623, and I've never been to Spiner's Pub. You ever been there, Dan?
I have not.
It's right down the street from where I used to drink all the time. It's right by Ricochet's. I mean, that's Lincoln Square right there. That's on Western. But a woman performing ventriloquist karaoke with a trunk full of puppets. That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
Let's see. It gives me a chance to perform without actually having to rehearse or be on stage, Hensley said. As an introvert, Adam Aronow never thought he would sing in front of a crowd, but the systems administrator began performing karaoke after he was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. The self-described hardcore karaoke nerd comes to Spiner's at least once a week and often performs mashups of songs. I like to say karaoke is democracy, artistic democracy, or as close as you can get, he said. You get an evening of entertainment you won't find anywhere else in the world. Karaoke couple Andrea Yesmetis and Zach Wolfenbarger. Wow.
Name of the week.
I'm telling you, Zach Wolfenbarger. They met at Spiner's 5 years ago and regularly performed duets together. They said the bar's welcoming atmosphere helped two complete strangers bond over music and express their eccentricity. In preparation for a Renaissance fair, I see where we're going with this right now. The writer and software developer showed up to Thursday karaoke in full costume. Oh, man. With karaoke, you're just out being yourself, and that's the way you can't hide. You're only ever successful when you're enthusiastic and authentic and having a good time. So there you go. So that's at the Spiner Bar, Spiner's Pub, which is Spiner's Pub, 4623 Northwestern. I believe we have a listener posted something on our Facebook about that place, Spiner's, and he said that his go-to is Too Much by Dave Matthews. And he says that nobody ever wants to hear that song. That's a very odd choice, by the way. Too Much is an odd choice for karaoke. But he says he sells it. He said he sells it. He dances around like Dave and then plays air violin like Boyd. I would enjoy that. Oh, I did Crash a couple of times. As my Dave go-to.
So, that's another long one, right?
4 minutes. Yeah. You just think it's long because it's Dave Matthews.
No. Which one's like 8 minutes? Is it Stay?
No.
One in that vein is like 8 minutes.
I know Crash isn't. Crash is like 4.5 minutes long. I mean, live, it's an hour.
Right, of course.
You know, but... yeah, I'm trying to remember which one's...
Yeah, I'll pull up there.
I think Stay is a normal length as well. Maybe, you know... But, yeah, no, now live, Dan, that's a whole different story.
Oh, yeah.
You know, every one of the songs live, 45 minutes. Now, the traditional experience is they say, Sakura Karaoke Bar, which is at 234 West Cermak Road. Karaoke, 6 p.m. to 2 a.m., Sunday through Friday, 6 p.m. to 3 a.m. on Saturdays. $25 cover includes two drinks. You call to rent the private room. For traditional karaoke, head to Sakura Karaoke Bar, a basement venue in Chinatown that offers both public lounge singing and private rooms to rent. You can come in and not know anyone, but then sing a song and people talk to you afterwards. Sakura regular Kyla Yong says, "We're all in it together." Yong, a digital marketer by trade, who has been coming to the bar for about 6 years, stopped by on a Saturday to celebrate a friend's birthday. She said she enjoys to sing songs that are cute and sweet, but have a powerful side, like tracks by Ariana Grande. While you'll hear many of the same Western pop songs as any karaoke spot, expect attendees at Sakura to pull out some Asian hits as well. Given the number of karaoke spots in the neighborhood, there's also a strong competition to provide a memorable experience. Sakura boasts performing stage and a dance floor with an LED lighting system. Although it's open 7 days a week, like most karaoke spots, the crowd really gets going on the weekends starting around midnight. Jessica Tolliper enjoys coming to Sakura so much that she also decided to host her birthday party there. Tolliper works as a prep technician at a camera rental house and brought her friends on stage to sing Estelle's American Boy. "I love putting on a show in front of a crowd. You can be in the forefront and not be judged." See? Now, the private rooms, though, that's where you got to pay the $25, right?
I believe so, yes.
For the private room, it's $25, and you got to buy two drinks. That's a little hefty, man. But then, what, you get the all night?
Yeah, I mean, if you spend 4 hours in there, $6 an hour.
Yeah.
Probably be spending two drinks anyway.
Yeah.
By the way, Crush was what I was thinking of.
Oh, yeah. Crush is long.
8:09 to be exact.
Yeah. Crush is long. Yeah. Crash is regular. Crush is long. It's a great song, though. Okay, we've got a lot of other karaoke spots here in Chicago, and I want to get to those, but here are the top 25 karaoke songs of all time. Waterloo, performed by ABBA. Really? That over Dancing Queen? Oh, no, Dancing Queen is on the list as well. Waterloo. I'm surprised that Waterloo is on the list. I mean, I'm not surprised that ABBA's on the list because, you know, obviously people love to sing ABBA and people go and see those Mamma Mia movies. But yeah, so Waterloo is on there. Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen. See, why? You know, here's the thing. Here's the thing, man. I the Bohemian Rhapsody thing, it's obviously very popular. People love to sing along to Bohemian Rhapsody. But you just, I would not, I would probably stay away from Freddie Mercury.
One of the most talented vocalists of all time.
The greatest vocalist and frontman in rock history. I really hope they don't screw that movie up. I'm so, Rami Malek looks exactly like him though. And he's got the moves down in the video, in the trailer and stuff. I just really don't want them to screw this. I'm really hoping it's good. Because Freddie Mercury, man, I mean, that's the man right there. But yeah, I would stay away as a person who can't really sing. I really wouldn't. I wouldn't try Freddie Mercury. That would be one I would stay away from. And especially a song as complicated as Bohemian Rhapsody. Now, that one, I would imagine, is popular with groups.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, 3-4 people get up there to sing it. Because when you get to the, you know, Galileo, Galileo Figaro, you know, that whole thing.
Right. Yeah, because there's not a lot of 3 or 4 person. A lot of duets, but not a lot of songs that could cater to a group of 3 or 4.
That's true. Do they have Islands in the Stream?
Oh, I guarantee it.
That's got to be one of the biggest duets of all time. So, all right, we're talking karaoke. Where do you guys go to get your karaoke on, and what songs are your go-tos? At 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here until 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Here are some of the other places that get mentioned in this article that Red Eye. We're talking karaoke. We would love to hear from you. What are your you got any karaoke stories? What's your go-to songs, and where do you go to do some karaoke? Red Eye did a thing called Amateur Hour exploring karaoke's, Chicago's karaoke scene. So they also mentioned some of the other karaoke spots. Blind Dragon, Chicago, which is at 613 North Wells. There's a Brando's Speakeasy, which is on South Dearborn. The Hidden Cove, which we mentioned already. Lincoln Karaoke. That the other one, Dan? That's like 2 blocks away from.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's the so Hidden Cove, and then like literally 2 blocks north on Lincoln Avenue is Lincoln Karaoke.
Right.
Geez, I wonder if there's a big rivalry. I think they're.
I don't know. Lincoln's pretty classy. It seems like a classier joint.
Yeah, I've never been there. I've been to Hidden Cove. Lincoln though, is it like a it's just a karaoke bar then, right?
Correct.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And you said more traditional one, right?
More traditional, yeah, like, you know, very clean and very well kept.
As opposed to the Hidden Cove. Louis Pub, 1659 West North Avenue. Okay. Never been there. Mary's Attic at Hamburger Mary's, which is 5400 North Clark. Been there. Hamburger Mary's opened like right before I left Andersonville. So Hamburger Mary's was a pretty new place when I was living there. I think it was open for about a year before I ended up moving away. And it's become huge. I mean, they do theater there. It used to just be a hamburger place. And then they opened up the attic. That wasn't, I don't even think that the Mary's Attic was open when I was living in Andersonville. Let's see. Murasake Sake Lounge, 211 East Ontario. Oh, that's right over here, man. Let's go now.
Yeah.
Number 18 Karaoke. That's an original title, which is 2201 South Wentworth. Punch Bowl Social on Green Street. Okay. Reggie's Rock Club. Now, see, Reggie's, which is a really cool place, by the way. Reggie's Rock Club. Awesome. By the way, Goblin, the guys who did the music for Suspiria, they're going to play at Reggie's and accompany Suspiria. They're going to screen Suspiria and Goblin is going to perform live the score right to the movie, which I've seen them do. And that is fantastic. If you get the chance to go, it's November. I can't remember what the exact date is, but it's at Reggie's and it's Goblin live scoring Suspiria. So they're going to screen Suspiria. And by that point, the damn remake will be in theater. So maybe they'll be very angry that night. Then it'll be a really a special, powerful performance. But I saw them at the Metro. I saw Goblin live score Suspiria at the Metro with my buddy Manny Tamayo, who is also like a huge horror fan, and it was phenomenal. I mean, if you get the chance, you should go. If you're a fan of, if you like Suspiria, and, I mean, it's one of the greatest movie scores of all time, and certainly one of the very, very best horror scores of all time. You know who's doing the music for the remake?
Who's that?
Tom York.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah. So. And so, yeah, Reggie's Rock Club, that's where you can get that's where I do, I believe Reggie's Rock Club is where they do the live band karaoke. I think that's right. And then there's Shoes Pub, as in what you wear on your feet, Shoes Pub, 1134 West Armitage. Sidekicks, which was mentioned earlier by Mark the Breadman, that's at 4424 West Montrose. Trader Todd's. 3216 North Sheffield. So that's the place that you were talking about.
Yep.
And then 0 Degree Karaoke Bar and Club, which is on 24th Street. Those are the standout places and the three big places that they profiled on in the Red Eye article. So, all right. Let's see. Here is John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
All right.
I'm calling from Eastern Iowa. There are a couple bars in this town that did karaoke. There was a karaoke service that had about 10,000 songs, and they had the usual pop groups that you were talking about, like one place they did ABBA, and I did Dancing Queen. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, this husband and wife team did the karaoke, and one night the man was working there, and I did Beer and I Breathe. And I got hoarse doing it. I sounded like I was trying to hit all the high notes. So when I got done, I sounded like a rusty pipe.
Yeah, that's another one of those songs, man. If you got to hit those notes, there's some notes in that song that only dogs can hear. I mean, there's, you know, yeah.
So anyway, I went out to this other bar. It was called the Time Out. It's about 3 or 4 miles from here. And I walked, and I got there one night. I was closing. I was doing karaoke, and they wanted to get done. It was like one in the morning, and I was doing Elvis's "Suspicious Minds," sure. And I was like doing all the. I was like even doing the backup parts, the backup singers.
Yeah.
But anyway, my tour of force out there was I did "Rubber Biscuit" by the Blues Brothers. Oh, you know, and it's got all those nonsense lyrics in it.
Yep.
And well, I couldn't believe it because, I mean, the crowd seemed to be getting off on what I was doing, and the girls with their guys that maybe hadn't heard it were asking, you know, how long does this song go on? Anyway, so I'm doing it, and I'm really getting into it, and I got done, and a bar owner came up to me, and he said, you know, I think you better leave.
That's very nice. John, thanks for the call.
Okay, man. Have a good evening. I'll talk to you again.
All right, there you go. John was asked to leave because he did Rubber Biscuit. You're familiar with that song, right?
I am, yes.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous song. Who does it originally? Why can't I don't know who does that song originally, because the Blues Brothers didn't originate. Nothing the Blues Brothers did was original. They were all covers. Who did Rubber Biscuit?
The Chips, according to Wikipedia.
The Chips. Okay. So is Eric Estrada and Larry Wilcox.
Yes.
Okay. Let's take a break, shall we? We got the news coming up, and then more karaoke stuff. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke, and I want to hear from you if you've got any karaoke stories or what are your go-tos or where do you go. 312-981-7200 here on WGN. Yeah. Hi. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And how's everybody doing on this Monday morning? My dad's going to call up and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. My main man, Steve Cochran, has your morning drive at 6. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We've been talking about karaoke. Where do you go in the city and in and around the city? What are the best places to go to? And what are your go-to songs? And if you have some karaoke stories, we'd love to hear from you. We had a caller named John say that the manager of the bar said, I think you should leave now, after he did Rubber Biscuit for karaoke. Texts have come in, and I also have the top 25 karaoke songs of all time. And let's see, 815 area code says, my wife has a very pretty voice and she loves to sing karaoke. I can't sing. For her birthday, we had a karaoke DJ come in and I got up to sing. I could see the look of panic in her face, but then I sang Tequila, which has three words, no tune. Tequila? All you do is say tequila. You know what you got to, if you're going to do that, then you got to get the big wooden shoes, the big shoes, and do Pee Wee Herman. That's what you have to do. Susan says, my church's carnival has karaoke. My brother's name is Kenny, so I sing Benny and the Jets, and I change it to Kenny and the Jets. Oh! Tom says, my song is Journey's Don't Stop Believin'. I would imagine that that's a huge... That's another guy that you don't really want to sing either. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's a guy that you don't... I mean, that guy's got an incredible voice. Steve Perry?
I'd be interested in calling back to a topic we had a few. The intersection of power ballad and favorite karaoke songs has to be very high. That Venn diagram has to cross over quite a bit.
I would imagine, yeah. Yeah, the power ballad's a big thing in the world of karaoke. Chris from Midway says, there's a bar at Archer and Harlem with live band karaoke. They are a very, very good cover band. Yeah. All right. Dan, hold on a second. Decker has just texted me.
Oh, my.
Hi, the lovely Kristen Decker, everybody. Decker texted me. He says, live karaoke is the absolute best. My go-to is Shoop by Salt and Pepper. Of course. And Regulators by Warren G.
Mount up.
Yeah, exactly. And then she says, P.S. Hi. Hi, Decker. She's the best.
We'll have to remember those. Maybe those could be our Bumpster Fly Jams Friday.
Yeah.
Although we have a special guest on Fly Jams Friday, so perhaps we'll let the special guest.
Yeah, well, let's let the special guest pick the fly jams. And that special guest, by the way, for Friday is Esmeralda Leon. She's going to be here. We'll get her in here because we have Jeff Tuckman, too,
right,
on Friday. So he'll be here at 1 o'clock, and then Esmeralda will be here at 2 o'clock, and she's not leaving until 5, as far as I'm concerned. So we'll get her in here. Maybe we can do some of the regular stuff that we always did with Esmeralda. Maybe we'll get a Skip Skipley will make an appearance, perhaps. And she's actually, her and Brandon are doing another You, Me, Them, Everybody at the Hungry Brain on Saturday night. And that's this talk show that she co-hosts with Brandon Weatherby. And they're doing it back at their home base, the Hungry Brain, and that's Saturday night. So she's coming on. That's her. That's the excuse
right,
to have Esmeralda in the studio with us. So, that's the excuse. But the reason why is because, you know, she's awesome, and we miss her. So, but anyway, she'll be on Friday. Let her pick those songs, yeah, for Fly Jams Friday, for sure. Okay, let's see. Some of the other ones. How about My Way by Frank Sinatra? That's probably, I can imagine that being a big one. I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor. Come on. Dancing Queen by ABBA. Angels by Robbie Williams. What is that? Should I know that song?
You might recognize if you heard it. It was a big song in the late 90s, early 2000s.
I know Robbie Williams is much more popular in Britain than he is here.
Very much.
I mean, he's a monster. He's huge,
yeah,
in Britain. But I would probably know this song, right, if I heard it?
I think so. I'm trying to pull it up.
Okay. That's Angels by Robbie Williams is considered one of the top 25 karaoke songs of all time. Like a Virgin by Madonna. That's a good one. Considered. It's Raining Men by the Weather Girls. Yeah! Summer Nights by Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta.
There's your duet.
There's your duet right there.
Here's Robbie Williams.
This is Angels. I'm loving angels instead. And through it, oh, she offers me protection. A lot of love and affection. Whether I'm right or wrong. And down the waterfall, wherever it may take me, I know that life won't break. No. I don't know. You said that was a really big song?
That was a pretty popular song. Oh. Well, I'm, like you said, more so in London, but it did hit the charts here.
Okay. I Should Be So Lucky by Kylie Minogue. Don't Go Breaking My Heart. There's another one. Elton John and Kiki Dee. Another classic duet right there. Sweet Caroline by Neil Diamond. There's a shocker. Oh, American Pie by Don McLean. God, do I hate that song. And you want to talk about, so you think Crush is long. American Pie. Do you remember Madonna's remake of American Pie?
Ugh.
Yeah. American Pie. Always reminds me of this bar that used to be O'Malley's, which was a bar on Green Street in Champaign. Every night at midnight, they would play American Pie, and everybody would sing along. So it would be a bunch of drunk college students, and they would have, like, dime beer night. I mean, just not, you know what I'm talking about, Dan, like one of these college bars that,
oh, sure,
you get dime beer night, and then they have these stupid traditions, and it's just, like, plastic cups everywhere. The whole bar smelled of stale beer. There were puddles of beer all over the tables and the floor and everything. And at midnight, every night at this bar, they would play American Pie. And all these drunk college kids, you know, don't even know what the song's about. They're all drunk, drinking their 10-cent beer out of their paper cups. And they're just singing along with American Pie. It was a nightmare. It was a nightmare. And that was a tradition for a long time. I mean, O'Malley's is closed now. From what I understand, it's closed now. I think it's been closed for years. But that used to be like a really popular bar, and it would fill up at midnight just because they would want people to, the place would be packed. They would sing American Pie, and then they'd leave. So, Steak and Shake, like right down the street, too, across the street, right down there. That was always where you ended up. We used to go down to Champaign to hang out, you know, and to party and drink. We would end up going to O'Malley's and then leaving there and going to Steak and Shake. And then usually going back to the apartment where the seven guys all live together, and we'd watch Double Dare at like 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, we'd be watching Double Dare on Nickelodeon. I remember that apartment was so disgusting that these guys lived in.
I was going to say, I'm sure that place smelled wonderful.
Oh, my God. I remember I took a shower one time there, and I didn't beforehand. I did not check the towel situation. And when I got out and I picked up there was a towel in this, and I'm assuming it had never been washed. And it was, you know, the mildew smell, and I blew dry myself. Because I was not going to use the towel. I used some toilet paper, and then I blew dry myself. It was disgusting. The place was disgusting, man. It was like, it was five guys in, and it was a bi-level apartment. And it had like the revolving staircase that you could go up to. They had the bedrooms upstairs, and like, but it was disgusting. It was in, you know, it was off campus, obviously, but it was in an area where a bunch of morons lived. Like the building was full of college students who all they did was drink, up all night drinking. That's all it was. It was only about four blocks away from, you know, like the bars and stuff. So it was prime location for going out and drinking. That's for sure. But oh my God. All right. Killing Me Softly by Roberta Flack. Boy, that's going to bring the room down, right? Don't you think that?
You could turn it into an anthem at the end.
Yeah. Hey Jude by the Beatles. So you're going to do the na, 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 na for like 20 minutes? You can get the whole room going on that song, though.
That's true.
You know? Don't Stop Me Now by Queen. Another Freddie Mercury? When did Don't Stop Me Now become as popular as it is now? I like to think it's because of Shaun of the Dead. That's personally what I like to, that's what I like to think. Because the scene in which they use Don't Stop Me Now on Shaun of the Dead is spectacular. So, okay, we got a break here. We got weather, and then we're going to take a break. And my dad is going to call in and tell a jokey time. And then we'll wrap up the show and the conversation about karaoke and karaoke songs. 312-981-7200 is the phone number.
Ooh, it's the best part of the week, baby. It's time to hear something funny. With your music intro.
Ah! It's a jokey time. It's a jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Hey! What'd I say?
It's a jokey time. It's a jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Ah, yes! Here we go!
Yeah. That's right. You know the theme. And it is my dad telling a joke. Every Monday morning, my dad tells a joke. And we're back in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here until 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. But it is time for a laugh. Monday morning, we always hear a joke from my dad. And here's my dad. Hey, Dad.
Hi, Nick.
How are you?
Pretty good.
All right. How's Ma?
Doing good.
All right. You got a joke.
Had a joke.
Right.
Said two old guys were sitting under a tree watching the sun go down. The guy said, "You know, I'm 84 years old. My body is full of aches and pains." He said, "You're about my age. How do you feel?" He asked the other guy. He said, "I feel like a newborn baby." "Really?" said the first guy. He said, "Yes." The second guy, "No teeth, no hair, and I just wet my pants."
All right. All right.
Oh, boy, it all comes full circle, Dad. All right. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you, Nick.
Okay, pal. Take care. There's my dad. What, you remember the other, I don't know if my dad told this joke. This is one that Walter Matthau told. Walter Matthau told on the rerun of The Tonight Show. He said, three old guys are sitting around, and one guy says, I feel terrible. I can't pee like I used to. I got a weak stream. It just doesn't work. and it just doesn't feel right. I just feel old, and it takes me a long time. I can't stand it. And the second old guy goes, yeah, me too. I haven't had a good BM in a long time. It's just real painful, and I can't stand it. And then the third old guy goes, well, you know what? This is great because, you know, I have full stream. You know, I pee like I was 18 again, and I have every single morning I pee, and then I have a big BM right 8 o'clock every single morning. And they're like, wow, that's great. What seems to be the problem? He goes, I don't get out of bed till 9.
All right.
That's Walter Matthau told that joke. Walter Matthau told that joke. Oh, we got to hear the thing with the thing.
That was jokey, jokey, jokey time. It was a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad told a joke.
Yeah. He'll do it again next week. All right, let's see. We got some texts here. We've been talking about karaoke and what are your go-to songs. You have any karaoke stories? And 312 says Peace Pizza on North Avenue does a great live band karaoke. Oh, they do? Wow. Maybe Rick Nielsen shows up every once in a while and
plays.
There
you go.
One guy got up and did Enter Sandman by Metallica, and he was spot on. I got up and did Engelbert Humperdinck After the Lovin' to Crickets. Yeah, if you want crickets, do some Engelbert Humperdinck. 727 area code says, good morning, Nick. Back in the day, I would do a couple of songs that included Escape, the Pina Colada song, and Mountain Music by Alabama. I usually got the crowd going by clapping. Yeah, that Pina Colada song. 847 area code, I used to think I was pretty good at karaoke until my brother showed me a video the next day of me singing. I realized I cannot sing. It's amazing what a lot of alcohol will make you think you're good at. Yeah. Um, 815 area code says, I don't do karaoke. I haven't done karaoke. I won't do karaoke, but if I did karaoke, I would do Turn the Page.
I did text and ask if it was Larry. I have not heard back yet.
It's not Larry. Larry did Night Moves.
But still.
Yeah, yeah. But that's my other friend is the one who was like, I'll be ready in about 6 minutes and 37 seconds. Time for a little Turn the Page. So I have a couple of ridiculous Bob Seger friend stories. Carl says, Werewolves of London by Warren. Yeah, I've done that one too. I've done Werewolves of London by Warren Zevon. 708 area code says, my go-to song is Brown Eyed Girl. Yeah. I just, you know, there's so many, you know, I worked in bars before, and many of the bars that I've worked at had the Van Morrison's greatest hits. And why would you play Brown? Why would you play Brown? There's like 800 songs to choose from that are all fantastic and don't get played every 45 seconds. Brown Eyed Girl, that's still. 312 area code says, where is the Righteous Brothers? You've lost that loving feeling. Well, it's Top Gun. Isn't that what Tom Cruise sings in Top Gun?
You are correct.
Doug says, Islands in the Stream is a popular song out here in rural Illinois by Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton. Here are some of the other ones that are on the most popular list. I Can't Get No Satisfaction by the Stones. Delilah by Tom Jones. Oh, that must be a lot of fun to hear live. New York, New York by Liza Minnelli and or Frank Sinatra. Total Eclipse of the Heart by Bonnie Tyler. That's when you want to get all dramatic. Livin' La Vida Loca by Ricky Martin. Livin' on a Prayer. Oh, God. Livin' on a Prayer by Bon Jovi. I bet that's that has to be played.
You got to take somebody's hand.
Yeah.
Tell them you'll make it. You swear.
I'm a Believer by the Monkees, Love Shack by the B-52s, and River Deep Mountain High by Ike and Tina Turner. So those are the most popular ones. Love Shack, another group. That would be a fun group one
to do. That would be a group one. Duets, yeah. Ain't No Mountain High Enough. I'm surprised that wasn't on there.
That's true. Very true. And what about Wanted Dead or Alive? Living on a Prayer is on here, but what about Wanted Dead or Alive?
I would think Living on a Prayer is a little more popular.
Well, but My Friend in the Wolf Shirt and Pajama, not pajamas, Wolf Shirt and Jeans.
He plays his own path. You know that.
I know that. That's right. All right. Let's take a break. Dan, what do we got going on to the show tomorrow?
Jim Ryan talking music.
Oh, cool. Jim Ryan will be in to talk some music. That's tomorrow. All right. Everybody stick around because the news is up next.